Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder with you on Monday. First half of today's show starts now. We're 312-981-7200. Hi, Wendy. How are you? Everything good?
Top of the morning to you, my friend.
Are you a little bit upset about the removal of Robin Ventura as the manager of your Chicago White Sox?
You're glad?
Oh, wow. That was
not
fast.
Not a manager.
That was fast.
Not a manager, although I don't know if Renteria is the way to go. I say bring back Ozzy.
I don't think
they will be saying
happen.
That for 50 years.
I know.
Yeah.
He is the guy that got him a World Series ring. However, I know he and the general manager, Kenny Williams, do not get along about anything.
See you, Kenny.
Get rid of him, too.
Clean house, baby.
Everyone must go.
How are the Cubs doing?
The Cubs are doing very well. Did you see that in the paper?
Yes.
Turns out they're doing pretty well.
I hear rumor around the water cooler.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, we don't have a water cooler.
Yeah, they're odds-on favorite to make the playoffs.
Seriously?
Yeah, people are saying they may make the playoffs this year. So what do you think it is? Robin Ventura was an exemplary player, great third baseman, got the job done, a fan favorite. So why didn't this translate to managerial skills?
Because you either have it or you don't. Bill, I love you to death, and you're great on the radio. If you all of a sudden became general manager of this place, I don't think you would do well.
Oh, we would fall like a house of cards.
But you know what I mean?
Right.
Those who can't teach and those who can don't general manage.
People say that, Steve. You've heard that 1,000 times.
Yeah, exactly like that.
We've got a pillow that says that in our living room.
It's a whole body pillow. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. If
you know what I mean, though.
Right. I do know what you mean, and I will prove your point. If you look at most of the best managers in baseball history, they were not good players.
Ozzy was pretty good, though.
Ozzy was a very good player.
Good old number 13. He was pretty good.
He was. But really, if you look at the guys that are your best baseball managers of all time, and that's everybody from Sparky Anderson.
Tommy Lasorda, your buddy.
My friend Tommy Lasorda.
Again, he comes back to haunt you.
I had to look behind me to see if he was
you did.
Gonna sneak up and strangle me. Just on and on and on. The best managers in baseball history, most of them, have not been great players. It's so weird that they can translate skills that don't seem to exist when they're on the field to being such good managers, but they do. Very strange.
I could not teach or be a boss because I am not very good at delegating tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do it at home, nobody does them, so then I get mad. So I would really be a bad boss.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I know.
That's terrible. That's
but,
awful.
You know, Robin, thank you. It's just
5 years.
No offense, four too long. I'll say three.
Oh,
all right, two.
No, you're probably right. I didn't think he would manage this. I was sure that they would have pulled the plug a year or two ago, and they didn't.
Me too. And I'm sorry to see anybody lose a job, and he's a nice guy.
He seems to be a nice guy.
Nice doesn't win games.
No.
Although, on the north side, it kind of does.
Yeah, Madden seems to be a nice guy, very smart man.
Yeah, but his name is Madden. So
right, it has
that
Madden.
Upsets it.
No, that's
all right,
true.
Good.
That's very true.
Thank you for explaining that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, usually in baseball, what they do is they hire a real fiery, angry guy, and then they replace him with a mild-mannered guy, and then when they fire him, they bring in another angry guy. Robin Ventura is mostly a nice guy, and Renteria is a little more fiery, but he's not super fiery. He's somewhere in the middle.
Where's he been lately?
He was the manager of the Cubs right before Madden. He was 1 year manager for the Cubs, and then they dumped him out to get Madden. But he's been a White Sox coach for a while.
Hmm.
You didn't notice
No.
that?
Has you gone to a couple
I guess
games,
I did.
Maybe?
I guess I did. I did not go to any games this year.
Right. They cleaned house. They started in the stands.
I did not go. I feel guilty, but I did not go.
Do you know the Cubs surpassed 3 million at home, and the White Sox were around 1.75 million. So
I thought 1,000.
No. No. That would be unfortunate. So the Cubs had not quite twice as many fans show up. But
that's always the
case.
And now that they're actually winning, good for the Cubs, whatever. I still hate Royal Blue. But good luck.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm surprised with the 1.75. That's quite a... I mean,
it's more than I thought, too, Steve.
Yeah, good for them, I guess.
I just saw that number yesterday, and I was shocked. My guess was going to be around 1.4 or 1.5, so they did pull off 1.75, or right around there.
Your guess was going to be that close. What do you think? You're Bob Barker?
No, but there's been so many games that I've tuned into where it's half full.
Because I was thinking 1.595.
Somewhere in
you
right
win.
There.
Right. The showcase. Price is right.
I'll take the macaroni and cheese.
All righty.
Isn't it funny? You know, I listen or watch a lot of baseball.
Yes, you do.
And there have been years that the Cubs just don't have it, so I think they would pick out a game like that attendance game. Guess the attendance game. They play that on the radio all the time. And I thought, well, that's just because the team isn't very good, so they're looking for something to do. But even on years like this where they win 103 games, you still get a half an inning eaten up with the guys trying to guess the attendance.
They do that at every ball game.
But it's so...
It's a time filler.
I know, but...
Well, I think that's because this year most of the games were over by the second inning.
Right.
You know, I'd be following on my phone, like, am I going to tune in? Oh, it's 5-0.
Right.
Another winning team in the city, Big Bears win.
How about that?
I didn't watch it. Did you?
Not a second of it.
Steve?
No, I was out of town.
Boy, we suck.
No, you know what? They're going to do the thing that they do every year, which is establish themselves as not be a good team, which they've done, but then win enough games to not get a decent draft pick.
It's not easily done, Bill.
I know, it's not easily done, especially with the consistency that they've been able to pull that off.
You have to find what you're good at and continue.
But this will be one of those years where you go, all right, we obviously weren't going to win, but if we had just lost one or two more games, we would have gotten a really high draft pick, and instead they don't.
But as my husband pointed out, they wouldn't draft anyone good anyway.
No, I know. I know.
He's as bitter as you are.
Or if they did draft somebody good, something would befall that person. There'd be some injury that would prevent them from playing.
Bet Cutler's back next week because Hoyer did an okay job.
All right. I didn't see the game, but everything I read is he did a halfway decent job. So now the question is, and their manager or their coach, Fox, has said, it's no guarantee when Jay Cutler is healthy enough, it's not a guarantee that he's going to be the starting quarterback, which I like to hear.
Because I don't think it depends on the injury. I think it depends when Fox feels ready to put him back in.
Right.
That's why he's not disclosing that.
Right.
It's not a season ender, but it's day to day.
Right.
Day by day. Day by day.
Right.
A little Godspell musical for you.
Right. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break, and then when we come back, there's a lot of other things to discuss. It's Mike and Mike in the Mornings here on WGN TV.
Day by day. Is that how we're taking it with Jay Cutler?
That's all we can do, Wendy.
I say leave Brian Hoyer in.
Leave him in.
It can't get any worse, can it?
No. No, I'd be all right with that.
Hoyer completed 28 of 36 passes for 302 yards.
It's a good day.
Two touchdowns and a passer rating of 120.1.
That's a very good day.
The second highest in his career.
Did he? I didn't see the game. So
I didn't
did
either.
He throw any interceptions, does it say?
I don't know.
All right.
Anybody who watched the game? So maybe Cutler's gone.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Would you watch then? If all of a sudden Cutler goes away.
No,
it's not just Cutler.
It's not just Cutler.
You just don't want to give him the power, do you?
I want to blame Jay Cutler, but I can't blame him. I've told you this. It's the coaching, it's the management, it's the ownership. They just don't do anything right over there. And it hurts because I loved the Bears for years and years, and I want to watch on Sunday. That's part of Sunday. And this time of year in the fall and the winter is watching the Bears, but they're unwatchable. I know they won the game yesterday, but the Lions are a pathetic team too.
According to CSN Chicago, rumors started even during Sunday's game that Cutler was the object of trade talks between the Bears and Miami Dolphins. That would ruin it for you.
The Dolphins also decided at some point that Dave Wannstedt, who was such a disaster as a coach here,
at least he had a great mustache.
He did have a good mustache.
No, he didn't. It was half a mustache.
Like a porn mustache. But the Dolphins decided at some point after seeing Dave Wannstedt fail miserably here, that's the guy for us. So there's a history over in Miami of them looking at our game films and going, yeah, we don't need to win. Let's get their guys. Let's get Dave Wannstedt. Let's get Jay Cutler.
I am a fire starter because I am just rubbing the sticks or the stones or the flint together just to spark you.
It was really nice yesterday not having to worry about those 3 hours, knowing that I wasn't going to block away. I played tennis.
See, that's perfect.
That's perfect. I didn't have to worry about the Bears at all.
Did you win?
Two out of the three.
Not
that's
bad.
Not bad. I don't know how to feel about the Kim Kardashian situation either.
I feel terrible.
Do you feel awful for her?
No, what? I mean, she was tied up and at gunpoint. And what's even more scary are people posed as police officers.
That is, I guess that is kind of disturbing.
So, I just think it's, I have some questions about the Kanye West show that was happening in New York. I know that he was made aware of the fact that Kim was robbed at gunpoint in Paris. What's she doing in Paris?
She's there with him, right?
Are they there together? In New York.
Oh, I thought they were there together. Oh. I don't
believe it or not. Wrong with going to Paris.
No.
I'm just curious why she wasn't at his show. Does she have a new line of fashion coming?
She's seen it. Would you sit through that show more than once?
Do you go to all your husband's shows?
I guess. Point well taken. Speaking of my husband, he said, I can't believe Kanye West stopped his show to go be by her side. And I said, what do you mean you can't believe that? And he said, well, I mean, he's doing a show. He's got fans there. I mean, so he just stops the show? I said, you mean to tell me, Jim, that something happened to me like that, you wouldn't stop your little Star Wars podcast and come be by my side?
You said little?
Did you?
You can't say
little. I probably did.
Oh, man. Dagger in the heart.
And then he said, yeah, I guess there was a gun involved. Yeah, I guess. But my question is, why didn't Kanye West's his manager or whatever, tell him after the show was over? There was nothing he could do.
He seems to have something of a bad attitude sometimes. Are you picking that up about Kanye West? Just a slight temperament? So if you're his manager and you don't give him this information...
Yeah, I guess. You're his former manager then.
Yeah, he would fire him,
I guess.
I'd want to know right away, but if she's a 8-hour flight away and it's over and she's safe...
Can I tell you something comparable that happened to me? A couple of years ago, my wife every
year... Let's hear this, Steve.
Let's start with the jewelry. Go ahead.
I don't have $10 million in jewelry. 9.3 at the most.
I was going to guess 9.59.
No, about 9.3.
Is that the attendance of the Cubs game? All right, sorry.
All right, so every year, for years, my wife would direct this Christmas pageant at her church. This went on for years. So she would go early in the day on Christmas Eve and work on the pageant, and then I would go and watch it on the night of Christmas Eve. Yeah, because, I know the story. I know how it ends. Spoiler alert. It's an interesting story.
Too soon.
So, all right. So I get a call with an hour to go until showtime, and it's one of her sisters. And her sister says, is Terry there? And I said, she is not. She's at the church. The Christmas pageant is tonight because it's Christmas Eve. So then there's a long pause, and she said, well, I don't know what to do then. I go, why? What's wrong? And she said, our dad is in serious condition. He's in the hospital. It doesn't look like he's going to make it. Fast forward, he ended up making it. He's no longer with us now.
But it didn't look like
it
at the time.
But at the time, it really did not look like he was going to make it.
And you can't tempt fate like that.
Right. So,
Oh my God, you're in a bad position.
What do we do? No. She goes, well, Terry's about to direct the show. Do me a favor. Don't tell her until the show is over. I said, I don't know if I can do that. She goes, you can't do that because I know my sister, she will want to pick up and leave, and she's been working on this show for a month. You can't, please just don't. So I saw her before the show, and I couldn't say anything, and I felt trapped.
Well, at least her sister was giving you that.
What did Terry say?
As soon as the show was over, like the second the show was over, I put my arm around her and I said, come with me. We have to have a quick talk. And she said, what's going on? Is everything okay?
God, that is a bad setup. Why do people do that? Why don't you just go, hey, Tara, come here for a second? Because everybody does that. And then don't do it, people.
But it's a way of like bracing her for.
Right.
There's news coming that you're not going to want to hear. You need a minute or two to just kind of.
I guess.
Let that settle in. So as soon as the show was over, I told her and we raced. And it's like an hour and a half from where we are to where we were going. But I said to her in the car, I said, I'm so sorry. I couldn't tell you earlier. I was sworn to secrecy. And I said, and if I were you, I'd be mad at me for not telling. But your sister's made that decision. And I think it's a good one because I didn't want you to leave early. It meant a lot to those kids to do this show, and you've been working on it for a long time. So she understood that. I mean, the main concern was her dad at that point.
But I think you got off the hook because it was her sister saying, we've made this decision.
Her sister and her mom, by the way.
If my brother or anyone ever calls you, Bill,
yes,
tell me.
Immediately.
Absolutely.
Right away.
Yeah, I don't want to...
Boy, that's a tough position to be in for you, though, because it's like you don't keep secrets.
Can I tell you something? It was an hour before the show, and then the show itself was, well, it's a mass. It's not just a show. It's a mass and a show. That was another
mass and a show.
Same price?
Yeah, one price.
Wow, great. That's a good deal.
No double collection on that one?
No, it's a one-time fee. There's a convenience fee, but there always is. So from the hour before she told me until, and then the next hour of the mass and the show, so that's 2 hours, it seemed like 3 days.
I believe it.
Because I'm just sitting there going, what if he doesn't make it? And then Terry says to me, you knew he was that sick and you didn't tell me, you know, so that was weighing on me.
Yeah, I think I would have told her.
Do you think so?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I would have, but it worked for you guys. So.
It ended up working, and he made it through not just the night, but then he lived several years after. So, you know, that's a happy part of the story, but... it's tough when you have some inside information like that and you're going, okay, there's reasons to say something, but then there's reasons to not say something.
Was he able to go to the pageant the next Christmas? Because then it could be an ABC Family movie.
Yes. Steve is always looking at the bright side of life. You know
he was
that?
Not, but for the purposes of the ABC Family movie, I'm going to say he was.
I think that would be good.
All right.
All right. Well, so the Kim Kardashian thing, if you were Kanye... You wouldn't be sitting here, first of all.
Right.
If you were Kanye, would you want to know that it happened, or would you? Because Steve said he'd like to know, but if she was, you know,
if
okay,
she's safe and it's over,
then you finish the show that the fans paid for, and you hop a flight to Paris.
That is tough. That's so tough.
Wow, I'm not so mad at my husband anymore because, again, Bertrand is the voice of reason. And that's what Jim said. The show must go on. She was okay.
They do say the show must go on, but you want to be at the side of somebody you care about.
Yeah, but the side, I mean, you'll get there 2 hours later.
Right.
More than that, because flying to Paris,
right? Well, I mean,
right?
But if you were to leave right away or wait for the show.
But what, let's say, hypothetically, for the sake of the ABC Family movie that they'll make on this, let's say that the people who were in the room with her were still there. Like they said, hey, there's a situation going on you need to be aware of. These guys are in your west. Then you get told the information and you fly over.
Why wouldn't the police already have that under control?
Oh, don't ask that question.
Maybe it was a hostage situation.
You would go, definitely.
Then you go, right?
Doesn't he have access to a Concorde? Couldn't that get him there quicker?
I think it's Delta. I think he flies Delta.
He does fly Delta.
And they don't go direct to Paris. So
no, you stop over.
Milan, I think it was.
Yep. It's a two-hour layover.
Well, I'm glad she's okay. I just want to know why you travel with $10 million worth of jewelry.
That's a better question.
But one ring was 4-point-something million, so that's half of it right there. But, you know, you bring the crappy jewelry to travel. You don't bring the good stuff.
Wendy, that hotel safe is the safest place you can put anything. You're safe forever in there. You know
really?
That.
Really? You mean the combo for everybody isn't 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yes, it is. All right, a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Blackhawks Hockey on 720 WGN.
So I'm thinking, what do I do for a unique Halloween costume this year? Well, I went to Goodwill just to look around, saw these 6 plastic bowls, and inspiration. Picked up a salad spinner they had, can cozies, a shirt and sweatpants, and I had my costume.
To see what costume these items were used to make, visit AmazingGoodwill.com. Goodwill is your Halloween headquarters for low-priced Halloween decorations and everything you need to make that perfect one-of-a-kind costume. Goodwill. Amazing.
Welcome to the sweet spot, where your home gets the innovative appliances it needs and you get really low prices. Right now at the Home Depot, save up to 30% with special buys on the most innovative appliances, like a Samsung top load washer and electric dryer. They both accommodate larger loads and they're just $498 each. Sweet. Nobody beats our prices. Guaranteed. With up to 30% off appliances, now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. While supplies last, U.S. only. Gas dryer extra. See store for details.
Good food at tasty prices. That's Mr. Submarine. Open late. Locations throughout Chicagoland. Visit MrSubmarine.com and drive into deliciousness.
Steve, thanks. Normally, Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune joins us at 11:30. This week, he had something very, very pressing, very important to do, so we've asked him to come in a little bit earlier, and he's obliged. Thank you, Eric.
Well, let me say what that important thing is,
sure.
Which is that the U.S. Senate debate, the first debate between Mark Kirk and Tammy Duckworth, is going to be three floors above us, or four floors above us on the fourth floor here, at 11 o'clock, which is my usual time is 11:30. So I really want to be there for that. It's going to be really interesting to see, you know, how Mark Kirk presents himself. You know, we haven't really, he says some goofy stuff. He doesn't seem to, you know, he goes off the rails occasionally. It'll be interesting to see how he holds up in an hour-long debate. I think that's a lot of the question that people have about him right now is he up to continuing with the job? He's been a pretty moderate voice for Illinois, and so it'll just be interesting to see. I'm really looking forward to seeing that debate.
He's gone against the grain on more than one occasion of the Republican right.
A lot of
he's,
times, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, he has. He's, you know, and
distanced himself from Trump almost immediately.
And he's one of the few who stayed distanced from Trump, and he met with Merrick Garland, Obama's Supreme Court nominee to replace Scalia, and a lot of the Republicans have said, no, you shouldn't have done that. And he's the one who's pushing for hearings. I mean, not that it did any good, but yeah, he has definitely not been a down the line rigid ideologue. So he's been an interesting senator to have. So anyway, that'll be an interesting debate. And it'll be live streamed, by the way. I would recommend that you watch it, of course, after you listen to Bill and Wendy.
Sure.
Of course.
Thank you.
You'd want to wait for that. But
I like
it'll
them
be
both.
Archived.
I really do. They both have some really great qualities.
No, I really nerded out this morning reading their position papers that they had submitted to the Tribune. They have I think they're posted online. But you read, you know, all their positions in there. But you read, it's pretty reasonable. I'm like some things I disagree with, but you know, it'll be interesting. So let's
just like the presidential election. It's like either way, you're a winner.
No.
Wow. It's not like the presidential election.
Not like that at all.
Really. We tried to actually get you on the air. Was it Friday that the Tribune came out with their endorsement for Gary Johnson?
Yeah, I was out giving a speech in the suburbs, so I couldn't do that. But yeah, it was a big day upstairs. A lot of email from people who are really questioning that endorsement. And I answered a lot of those emails. And if you've written to me, I'm still getting through them, so I will get back to them.
We had more than one caller or texter say that because of this, they're distancing themselves from the Tribune. They're canceling their subscriptions. They don't agree
with... Right, and we said don't do that.
Yes, thank you. And what I've said to those people is, yes, you know, this endorsement of Gary Johnson, I don't agree with it, and that's fine. The Tribune editorial voice is a voice at the paper. It's a strong voice. I'm not diminishing it at all.
Who's in that editorial board?
Well, look, I'll get to that in a second, but I will say, you know, they publish, you know, my work, and I've been very critical of Trump, and they are too. And I've been fairly supportive of Hillary Clinton. They publish Rex Hupke, Darlene Glantz, and Mary Schmeek, Heidi Stevens, Clarence Page, all of whom are fairly liberal, and then Steve Chapman, who's on the board, who is often is always interesting, but sometimes he's I'm with them. So, mm-hmm. I mean, they publish a variety of voices, plus all the op-eds. So it's not like, you know, we're some sort of right-wing news outlet or some libertarian think tank news outlet. The op-ed pages publish a variety of views. And, you know, and the journalism that we do is not connected to the editorial board. So all the investigations that we do, the political coverage, all that stuff, it should not be connected in people's minds. Like, I'm going to stop subscribing because of this editorial position. The editorial board is, I think it's about a dozen people of a variety of views, and I sit with them upstairs. I go to a lot of their meetings. They're very smart people, and they make their decisions. And I'm not at all in the meetings where they talk about the endorsements. They don't want me in them, and I want to stay away from them. And how they come up with their views is that, you know, they do get they talk about these issues, but they also feel that the Tribune itself has a voice that is bigger than all of them, that has stood for certain principles for generations. And it's actually true. Generations is probably wrong. I think that the Tribune was really a right wing, you know, organ back in the 60s. And it has evolved since then. It is a moderate Republican, small government, low taxes, but socially fairly progressive paper. I mean, we're against the death penalty. We've been spoken out for gay rights and so on. It's not, you know, some hardcore conservative place. So when they make these endorsements, they get around and discuss them. You know, they get a sense of what the people who are there now, but I think those people feel that they are, you know, but temporary custodians of this voice, that the voice is bigger than theirs, and they try to sort of channel that entity that is the Tribune editorial voice. And that's what they came up with.
Was there a time, I think it's commonly known that of your two major papers, as I was growing up, the Tribune and the Sun-Times, the Tribune had much more of a slant to the right. Was there ever a time where the publishers or the editor of the Tribune said to their columnists, we would appreciate that what you write about reflects those values?
I don't know if there was ever a time like that. I know that I've been writing a column for 30 years, and it's never been the case with me. And, you know, I had a column, it was sort of coincidental, that my column on Friday morning in the paper explained why I thought a vote for Gary Johnson was not a good vote if you're on the left or progressive at all. That mm-hmm. Gary Johnson has a couple of, you know, appealing things. Oh, he's pro-pot, he's pro-gay rights, he's pro-choice. But you scratch the surface of this, you know, seemingly cool, hip uncle guy, and
right.
realize that he's a pretty hardcore right winger, especially economically, and his tax plan is crazy, and it would really hurt poor people, you know, and his health care plan. I think that you know, that sick people would be sicker and poor people would be poorer under a Gary Johnson presidency, if he would even be a good president, and I'm not sure that he would be, given the way he couldn't answer some basic questions. He didn't know who Harriet Tubman was.
Okay, that's a problem.
Did you hear that story?
What?
Yeah, he didn't know who Harriet Tubman was. He didn't know what Aleppo was.
Well, that I understand.
He didn't know anyone was injured in the bombings on the East Coast. And most importantly, when pressed by Chris Matthews the other day to name a foreign leader that he admires, couldn't name a single one. That was on Thursday, the day before the Tribune endorsed him as the president. Do you think they took any of that into account when going over the pluses and minuses of him?
Well, that happened on Wednesday. The Chris Matthews interview was Wednesday night.
You're right, Wednesday,
and then the endorsement launched Friday morning. You know, I don't think that you turn on a dime based on a failure to answer a question like that. I don't know whether they
had any
second thoughts. That would be a question. I know John McCormick came down and talked to Ro Khan on Friday.
Yeah.
I mean, those are kind of questions. I mean, like I said, I don't get involved in those decisions, and I don't know what the conversations were. I'm sure it gave him some second thoughts about it, but, you know, at some point you can't, like, okay, we're going to tear this all up now because he couldn't answer a question. So, but it's a tough.
I would have.
It's a tough question.
It was an easy question. What question could have been asked that would have been easier that he couldn't have, name another foreign country?
Name a state in the United States.
Right.
Because they did say name someone you admired. Couldn't he have just very quickly got, really, there's no one I admire? And I mean,
there
he just
been a
was
way to
so
mask it.
Like. Deer in headlights, you know.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a painful moment. I mean, you couldn't not to be able to come up with, you know, like Justin Trudeau, for example.
Sure.
I mean,
it's our neighbor to the north.
You should probably have
heard of him.
I had this conversation with people. It's like, okay, name three foreign leaders you admire. They go, well, Justin Trudeau, Angela Merkel. You know, it's hard to.
It is hard.
These things. And especially when you're on national TV, I can sort of relate to that. Although when you're a presidential candidate,
right.
And this gets back, you know, we haven't even spoken since the debate on Monday night. We spoke last Monday morning.
Sure.
Where I talked about, oh, the bar is so low for Trump, he will clear it easily. Well, I regret the error. You know, he was so unprepared for that debate. And the question is, if you're not prepared for an interview with Chris Matthews, and you're not prepared for a 90-minute debate, how can you put yourself forward to be prepared for
when the country needs
the biggest job in the world, which is just mind-boggling?
Yeah.
Let's talk more about Trump.
All right, we will. Let's take a quick break, and then more of this sort of thing. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Hillary Clinton's only loyalty is to her financial contributors and to herself. I don't even think she's loyal to Bill. You want to know the truth?
Whoa. All right. So how about that?
So he said that. So that happened.
Yeah.
That was Saturday night. That was unbelievable. He had a Twitter storm on Friday morning going after Alicia Machado. Is that
yeah.
her name? The
former
Miss
Universe.
About the one who gained some weight. How
and she's disgusting.
And Saturday he goes off on this tangent. He's, of all people... First of all, I don't think there's any evidence that Hillary Clinton was ever unfaithful to Bill. And second of all people to raise infidelity as a possible
right.
issue, something to hold against somebody in a president. This is a guy he's had five kids by three women,
mm-hmm.
Famously cheated on his first wife with his second wife,
mm-hmm.
and bragged about it. And now he's bringing this up. I just don't, this guy is out of control. And the thing that's really scary about this to me is that he doesn't seem to listen to the people around him. That, you know, he's got Kellyanne Conway, whatever you think of her, she's a pro, and she is trying to rein him in, and he doesn't listen. He's tweeting at 3 a.m. about Miss Universe 4 days after this became an issue, keeping it alive. And if he's going to be president, he's got to listen to people around him who know a lot about these issues and know a lot about what's going on. He doesn't seem to listen to anybody, and it's got to be scary for people.
Do you think that stems from the fact that for the majority of his life, he hasn't had to listen to anybody? He's got advisors, he's got staff, and they can say whatever they want, and then he can nod. But the bottom line is, he can kind of do as he's pleased.
This is
for
the
years.
Fallacy in my mind of that someone who's good at business is going to be good at being a chief executive in the government context. I think that's a fallacy. I think we're seeing it in Illinois right now. I don't think Bruce Rauner has any particular political talent. I'm sure he's really good at business, but he's not showing a talent for the kind of, you know, bringing people together that you need to have to be an executive. The other thing about Trump is that you know, the big issue today, it was over the weekend after this remark, was about his taxes. You guys follow this story?
Yep.
At all? New York Times wrote a story saying that he probably didn't pay, or he could have paid zero income tax
for 18 years.
Yeah,
18 years.
Decades.
Now, my view on this, and my wife and I have argued about this strongly, which is I think that he's under no obligation to pay more taxes than he owed. And if he lost basically $1 billion in the mid-90s,
he's
a good businessman.
To me, that's the issue. His supporters are going on TV saying he's a genius because he knows how to work the tax code and pay no taxes. I think his accountants may be geniuses.
Are they running?
But they're not running. You know, I don't think he knows. He says, I know this. I know more about the tax code than anyone. I don't think that's true. I think his accountants know about it. But I would, you know, nobody, you I'm sure none of, neither of you, nobody listening to us right now pays more taxes than they should. You know, your accountant doesn't say, well, we could take your home mortgage deduction. You say, no, that wouldn't
Please
be
don't.
Right. Please don't. I want to pay more in taxes. We all try when we do our taxes to pay as little as we want. He did that. And I don't, that's of all the things, I don't hold that against him. I really don't. I think that's what you do when you're in business. And he said, I think plausibly, that this would have been irresponsible of him to the people who work for him, the people who are part of his company and all that. It's you don't pay any more taxes than you owe. The thing that is really interesting, Bill, that you point out, which is that he lost $1 billion
in a year.
And he points himself and he portrays himself as this really brilliant businessman. If you're a really brilliant businessman, you probably don't lose $1 billion, especially in the 90s.
Yeah,
right?
But he has money. So $1 billion to him is not.
Not
much,
what it would be to us.
Right.
It would be most of your paychecks.
That's why he's so relatable to me in many ways.
Wouldn't it be nice, though, if we could all afford a crack team of accountants that could find these loopholes so that we could go 18 years, potentially, without paying federal taxes? That's near impossible. It's hard to sell a country on the idea that we're going to do all these things. Now, tax money will pay for it, but it won't be my tax money. It'll be your tax money. I have accountants that found loopholes.
I think the way this is perceived by people is, you know, that he somehow cheated. There has been no allegation that I've seen that he cheated on his taxes. That he did. The scandal is that we have a tax code that allows this to happen. That allows someone who makes as much money as he does not to pay any taxes because he made such inept investments. And of course, he also declared bankruptcy 6 times over the course of this time. So there are people getting, you know, paid pennies on the dollar for what he owes them over that time. So he knows how to take advantage of the laws. I haven't heard from him, though, what he's going to do to change those laws. He's the one who says, like, well, I know the system. I can fix it. What's he going to do to fix it? Is he going to say that when you have these kind of business losses, you can't write them off? I'm not an accountant. I don't know what that would do to other businesses who maybe don't have as much cash as he does. That the way the tax system is set up, it's not random. It's not like they set this up in order to, you know, just give rich people more money. They want to encourage investment in business, and they don't want to take people who have failed investments and ruin
right.
them over that.
Right.
So, you know, I would love to talk to an accountant about that. But I think I would like to hear what his plan is, not to make it so that people don't have
Did
to pay
you
taxes.
Know that such a thing existed, that if you had one disastrous year, you could use those lost credits for the next 18? I had no idea.
Isn't
such
it
a
year
thing.
To year, though? You can't
That's
do
what
it.
I was always under the
That's
assumption.
That's what I
of.
Thought. Yeah, I was surprised to me. I guess when you have major losses, you can go back and redo your taxes from the previous 3 years and then 15 years going forward.
Yeah.
So you can.
But did
you
know that that existed?
I did not know.
I would not have guessed that.
The last time I lost $1 billion a year, I should have known this because I've been paying a lot of taxes since then.
What did he do to lose almost $1 billion in a year?
He had a hotel thing go bad, or a casino, or an airline investment. He's had a bunch of things that didn't go well. Trump you know, Trump.
At least he tries. You got to give him an A for effort.
He had a mortgage company that didn't work. I'm not sure which businesses they were. And of course, the final thing, we probably run out of time here, but there was a big article in the New York Times this morning about, you know, his attack is going to be on Hillary Clinton, that she enabled Bill in his infidelities, and she also was part of the group that was trying to.
Well, he accused her over the weekend, right, of being unfaithful to him.
Yeah, we played the tape.
We played that audio.
Yep.
That's Bertrand. Just
He's busy.
I listen to as much Eric Zorn as I can,
but not quite enough.
No, never enough.
And he also went on to say she couldn't, you know, walk or 15 feet to the car without collapsing. How is she going to? What does that have to do with anything?
Well, she was ill, but their contention is that she is still really ill. That's and you know, he's feeding on this thing that she's going to die soon, which is like what the National Enquirer is pushing out there. The interesting thing to me was that I thought she got stronger as that debate went on.
Absolutely.
And by the end of 90 minutes, he seemed like he had run out of gas.
Yep.
And that's when he was babbling and saying that the most immature thing I've ever heard anyone say in a debate, which was like, well, I could say something bad about you, but I'm not going to.
But did you see his quote a couple days ago where he said for the upcoming debates, the two more that they have together, he can be meaner. If he wants to be meaner, he can be meaner.
She's mean, but he can be meaner.
Eric, the Machado thing was obviously planted. That was all planned. Do you think I was going to say something worse, but I didn't? Was also planned, because all of his surrogates went out there and said what a great guy he was for not doing it, and by not talking about it, they talked about it.
He didn't have anything up his sleeve.
It was all about the affairs and Clinton and the way Hillary Clinton, you know, treated Bill Clinton's women and all of that. I think that's what they're all alluding to, and now we're all talking about it, and he's getting credit for not talking about it.
I really think Hillary should have turned to him and said, "No, I've got time. Please, you've called me all kinds of names,
right?
You know, to my face. Tell me what you want to say." I think that would have been a great move, because he was not thinking all that clearly at that point.
He really wasn't,
and he would have said something pretty awful and incomplete. The way he was speaking in like partial sentences, that whole part of the transcript where he's talking about my son, he's 10, he does really well with computers. It's the computers. It's the cyber we have.
Yeah,
he's like,
where was that
babbling?
Going?
Yeah. I don't know. He's babbling. So I wish Hillary just.
He was babbling bigly.
I mean, he's big time. All the best people said
it's
so.
Still, I listened to that three more times. I swear he says big
league. Bigly, not big league. Oh, big league?
It really
a lot
sounds
of people
like
think
big,
he said
league
big league
to me.
He's used the word bigly before. It's one of his words.
All right, we need to go. Eric, you have to go.
I've got to go.
You got stuff to do.
It's ChicagoTribune.com. Just go to the, and it'll be streaming on the top of our website.
I have
debate.
To say, it's also at WGNRadio.com.
Oh, it is there as well.
Also there.
All right,
great.
You'll find it.
Just listen to that debate.
Mark
it should
Kirk,
be great.
And Tammy Duckworth.
In front of the editorial board. It should be great.
Thank you. We'll talk to you next Monday. Read Eric Zorn in the Chicago Tribune, a break, and then Steve's News next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. We're talking about the candidates.
Yeah, Donald Trump, as it turns out, I guess this part of the story is widely known. He has not disclosed his taxes, even though every other candidate since the 1980s has. Donald Trump has said no. He's under an audit right now, and as soon as the audit is over, he'd be happy to. And then as soon as Hillary Clinton turns over her emails, he would be happy to. But for the time being, he's not going to disclose his taxes. However, his taxes from, I think, 1995, does that sound right? I want to say 1995, were just disclosed. And in those taxes, we learn that it's very possible that after a terrible loss, where he lost almost $1 billion in 1 year, he found a way to not pay taxes for the next 15. He got credits for the three previous years and then the 15 that followed. So we're trying to figure out.
I want to know how it goes 15 years.
Yeah, I can't.
Because you said something to me off the air. What if he has like a crazy great year?
What if he makes in 1 year, and I'm pulling out a number that's impossible. Let's say he makes $1 trillion in a year. Not a million, not a billion, but $1 trillion, right? So then because of this tax code, would he not have to pay money on that? Is it just limitless?
See, that doesn't seem right. You have a bad year, you can cut your losses and not pay taxes for that year. But I don't understand how it can go on. I'm not saying he did anything illegal.
I know for myself, I've had years where I've done much better, and I've had years where I've had a disastrous year. And there's been nothing that's been able to have been carried over from one year to the next. Each year always stood on its own.
But you're not a business.
I'm not a business owner. I'm a private citizen. So I don't know if the laws in terms of this are incredibly different, but it just seems, I don't know.
I think Brian is going to shed some light on this a little bit. Hi, Brian. Are you a business owner?
I was, and thanks for taking the call. I just don't understand why why he doesn't just say it like it is and come out with a truthful explanation. Because here's what happened with me. In 1985, I bought a restaurant. I've been a restaurant owner for years. I was a restaurant owner for many, many years. In 1985, I bought a restaurant. It takes a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of effort to get things started, right? Not every restaurant or business hits the ground running. Some take years to start performing. So I had a CPA, and my CPA was able to go back, because of the losses involved, was able to go back 5 years to 1980 and recover some of the losses that I incurred in my first few years of being a restaurant owner. I don't know how or why it is that way, except that that's the rules. And, you know, and that's what he did. So effectively, for about 15 years or so, I did not pay any income tax because of the losses on the business originally and going back and whatever. I mean, it seems crazy, and it probably is crazy. But when you're a business owner, you're told to write off every deduction you possibly can. You can lease a car and write it off as a business expense. You can use your cell phone as a business expense. Even though you would have a cell phone anyway, you can use it as a business expense. Health insurance, whatever it might be. I mean, he could be writing off his airplane, right? But it's the rules that the IRS has set up. And I don't know why he just doesn't come out and say that instead of making himself look like an idiot, which he is, but it's just so much simpler to come out and tell the truth about it than it is to just be so vague about it all the time.
Brian, he's not an idiot. He's a genius. I heard both Rudy Giuliani and Chris Christie call him a genius, so I am going to believe that he is a genius.
What's happened to Rudy Giuliani, by the way? I was such a fan of his, and now I'm really changing my views.
Yeah, no kidding.
I know.
Wow.
I know. So I know this is a personal question, Brian, but I'm curious. If I were you, this news would seem way too good to be true. Did you check it with another accountant before you filed, or did you just assume, my accountant says
no? No, I did. I did check it, and honestly, I'm still in business. I'm not in business for myself, but I do this type of work now for others, and so, you know, I give seminars and stuff on this kind of the same topic, to say, look, as you're going through your business years, you're told to write off everything you can, run every legal expense through your business. But when you go to sell your business, those expenses that you're writing off have taken a toll because it's showing that your business isn't very profitable.
Right.
So you can't have it both ways. Either you're going to get the tax deduction or you're going to make a bunch of money when you sell your business. And there's some mid ground there where, you know, a business owner can, if they can show that they've been writing off their car payment or writing off their cell phone or their health insurance, they can kind of add those numbers back into the profitability of the business where it pertains to selling it to another person, right? It gets real dicey, but
accountant
could certainly explain it better than I can.
Do you know, Brian, what the cutoff is in terms of the amount you could lose? For instance, a savvy businessman could have an opening year, could open up a business to purposely lose money. I know this sounds like the plot of The Producers, but you could purposely find a business that would lose money so that you would then get tax credits for the next 15 years and make limitless amount of money. There must be some way to discern whether or not that amount offsets the amount you would save, right? Do you follow me?
Well, yeah, I do. Somebody smarter than me to have to explain that,
All right.
And that's not the way I went into business. I was a 26-year-old, rosy-eyed, whatever you want to call
sure.
it. I was all about getting into business and being a big shot.
Right. Right.
didn't work that way. And my example is, minuscule compared to what Trump's example is, right? I mean, absolutely minuscule.
You never lost almost $1 billion in 1 year, did you?
No.
Good.
I lost that this morning.
Today you did?
Yep.
That's a lot of money.
There you go.
Wow. Brian, well, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
A great day. Thanks for listening.
All right. Should we take another call?
Sure.
Carol wants to talk to us. We're taking your calls.
Hi.
Hi there.
When we moved back to Illinois, we put a down payment on a place to live. And that weekend, the guy took off.
Left with your money.
Left with our money.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, of course, not being too terribly upset, except that I was furious, we went when it was time to do our income taxes and everything, and they let us put it out over 8 years, and we were able to deduct some of that loss from our income tax, but we still had to pay.
Right.
I mean, I'm working on my second million because the first one's too hard to get.
Carol, that's a horrible story. I'm so sorry that happened to you.
It wasn't fun.
But it was limited. Like, you weren't able to deduct more than the money you lost. You were able over 8 years to spread it out. Yeah.
Kind of spread it out, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So, but, you know, we still paid income tax.
Yeah, of course. All right. Well, thank you. That's a horrible story.
It wasn't very much fun, but no, you know, you get through it. You learn the hard way.
Did you, at some point, I hope you hired an attorney or two to go after this guy, did you?
No, because we had already, before we put the money down, I was a little leery of this guy to begin with.
Yeah.
But we had gotten an attorney over where we had put, around where we had put the money down and everything. And he was the one that said, you know, this is going to be fine.
Yeah, and it wasn't.
He probably was best friends with the guy. I have no idea. But
How long ago was this, Carol?
Because the guy, I mean, you know, they knew that he was in, like, parts of, you know, that he had relatives in parts of Wisconsin and stuff. And believe me, we weren't the only ones going after him.
No, I bet not.
So, I mean, you know, but no, you know, some the realtor kept us kind of abreast of what was going on, but they never were able to locate him. So I have no idea where he went.
And that man's name was
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
That's how it ends.
Well, you know, karma. What they say about karma.
Right.
You know.
Let's hope it works.
It's a B word.
All right. Well, thanks, Carol.
All righty. Take care.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break and then more of your calls. We're trying to determine whether Donald Trump's moves were legal, moral, ethical. You tell us. 312-981-7200, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Today, the Tribune editorial board has decided to endorse a presidential candidate. You went with Gary Johnson.
We did.
Yeah, people should read it, because I saw the headline, and I'm like, they did.
What? I know, I did,
they
too.
They endorsed Gary Johnson? What are you doing, John? It's an honor to be able to scream that at the editorial board.
It's a widely shared honor.
It was cathartic, actually. I did that. That was a scream of a million voices, John. What are you doing?
The other 999,000, they're on my voicemail.
Yeah, uh-huh. I'll bet.
Row rages, so you don't have to. The Row Con Show with Anna DeVlantis, weekday afternoons at 3 on 720 WGN.
You know, furniture shopping should be fun, but the fun disappears after traffic jams, crowded parking lots, pushy salespeople, and visiting several stores because of limited selection. How about leaving the stoplights and stop-and-go traffic behind? Instead, enjoy a beautiful drive out I-80 and discover the selection of a dozen Chicagoland stores in one place. Goods Furniture in Kewaunee. Imagine three city blocks of America's most wanted furniture names at Goods Everyday Low Price. Relax in the wine cellar restaurant. Browse the clothing and gifts in the Market Square shops. Even stay overnight at Goods Bed and Breakfast. So save your time, your energy, and your money. Head west on I-80 to Goods Furniture in Kewaunee. For details and to start browsing before you visit, check out goodsfurniture.com. Goods is open every day from 9 till 6. No hype, just honest-to-goodness value, day in and day out.
Message and data rates may apply.
If you're considering going back to school, ask yourself the following questions. Do you need the flexibility to take classes on your schedule? Do you have college credits you need transferred? Do you want to earn a quality degree from a world-renowned university? If you answered yes to any of these questions, Arizona State University is the perfect school for you. Arizona State University offers over 100 highly ranked degree programs 100% online. You'll earn the same degree as you would on campus, from wherever you are, on your schedule. Plus, ASU Online accepts most transfer credits. For information, text LEARN to 42424. Learn for yourself why the Wall Street Journal ranks ASU fifth in the nation for producing the best qualified graduates, and why 90% of ASU grads are recruited within 90 days of graduation. Learn to grow, learn to succeed, and learn to thrive at Arizona State University. To learn more about ASU online degrees, text LEARN to 42424. Again, that's LEARN to 42424.
All right, I'd like to talk to you about the long-awaited Esotique XV from Chamonix. I love this stuff. I put it on this morning. I've been using it every day. Esotique XV combines the cutting-edge plant stem cell therapy and natural peptides. This fourth-generation Esotique is so advanced, it makes the look of crow's feet, laugh lines, and forehead wrinkles a thing of the past. It doesn't happen overnight, but I'm noticing huge improvements. Due to the combination of key ingredients, it also targets skin redness and old scars. And here's another small miracle. Call right now. You can try Esotique XV for a whole month absolutely free. Call 800-577-8623 for only a small shipping fee. Chamonix will rush you the brand new Esotique XV to experience in the comfort of your own home, your bathroom, the mirror. You'll see lines, wrinkles, and redness disappear off your face, or you don't pay. It's also a moisturizer. My skin feels very comfy right now. Call today. You'll also get the new liposomal deep firming serum as a free gift just for trying Esotique XV today. Call 800-577-8623, 800-577-8623. If you don't look 20 years younger, you don't pay. It's that simple. Call now, 800-577-8623. That number again, 800-577-8623.
Hey, Bears fans. Grab a copy of the Chicago Tribune at Jewel Osco this Sunday to collect your 2016 Chicago Bears Fathead Tradables. Collect all eight. Now through October the 30th.
Boy, you go above and beyond the call of duty. You know that? 312-981-7200 is the number to call. We're talking about Donald Trump and not paying income tax. I'm not saying he did anything illegal because I am not an accountant. I have an accountant. I don't deal with this stuff on my own.
It just seems like if you're going to sell yourself as a successful business person, which is what he's trying to sell himself as, you have to go with that and run with it. And it's hard to say you're successful. I know it was 1 year, but he lost nearly $1 billion in that year. He's also trying to sell the country on all these improvements, and those improvements happen
infrastructure
because of your tax dollars.
Yes.
It's tax dollars.
Bridges,
that will pay
airports,
for
the, he's obsessed very, with airports.
He wants the airports to look sparkling, clean, and new and shiny, and it's tax dollars that will pay for those bridges and airports and everything else he wants.
Not his tax money.
He's not paying it.
All right, John, go ahead. I never said it was illegal.
Yeah, let me say this. I'm at work, and a bunch of people are saying, oh, Trump didn't pay taxes. These people are just dumb. Everybody who has a basic common sense of economics knows that you can claim things. You can write off things. I just went to Chicago Public School, and I know this. You have so many years after the fact that you can keep claiming losses. I just don't understand this. Is he in jail? He's not in jail. Martha Stewart went to jail. A lot of rich people go to jail. It's just unbelievable that people think so bad all the time of Trump. Well, he did. He's a businessman. He didn't write the tax codes. Politicians probably created these complicated tax codes that are unbelievable.
I guess my problem with it is he's so flip about it and so proud of himself. And as our last caller said, why doesn't he just say, hey, the tax codes are this. This is how
much. Well, he kind of did a little bit in the last debate.
Yeah, but he was like, I've been audited. I can't release my tax forms when you're being audited. That is a lie. You can.
Right.
And just say, I haven't paid income.
He needs a marketing firm.
You're right.
That's one of the things he needs.
You're absolutely right.
John, you know roughly what you pay in federal taxes every year, don't you? Down to, say, within $5,000 or $10,000. I know what I do. You don't?
Yeah.
I do.
Yes.
All right.
Look, here, look. Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Oprah Winfrey, all these people do the same thing what Trump does. Exactly the same thing.
Pay no federal income taxes?
If they were smart about it and if they had losses, of course.
But everybody's touting the fact that he's such a great businessman. If he's had all these losses where he doesn't have to pay income tax, is he really a great businessman?
He's working the system. The system is what it is. Everybody does it, just like your previous caller says. Of course, he does it. Here, let me tell you something. Poor people don't create jobs. Rich people do. And this is, we need rich people. We need poor people to work in the factories. Not poor people. We'd like to have middle class, but we need everybody to pay taxes to a certain point. It's not smart to pay more taxes than what you're supposed to pay.
I get that.
There's no glory in that.
And I'm not faulting someone for making money either. There are going to be rich people, middle class exactly. people, and poor people.
But, John, all these ideals that he's trying to sell the nation on, it takes tax money to run those. Where will that money come from? If everybody finds similar loopholes to what he's finding, where does that money come from?
Maybe it comes from stopping all the politicians from stealing from each taxing function. It's unbelievable how our taxes do not go where they're supposed to go. It's a whole scandal. I mean, if you really have to change the whole American way as far as what the politicians do with the money. The politicians are leeches. They are leeches. They keep asking for more and more because they're not fiscally conscious. So what's he going to do? Okay, he's going to do something where maybe something's refreshing where, hey, maybe our tax money is going to go where it's supposed to go, to the roads and the bridges. Isn't that unbelievable?
But it's not just the bridges. It's not just the airports. He wants to wipe out ISIS, which is a great thing. I would love to see that happen. He wants to protect us all. But all of that, every bit of what he's selling us on, it takes federal tax money to do those things. And if everybody found similar loopholes to him, I know how much better my life would be if I didn't have to pay federal taxes. I'd be on easy street. I know what I pay every year.
We all have to pay a certain amount because we have to have roads, bridges, military, police, and that's understandable. But like I said, there's no glory in paying more money than you're supposed to.
And no one should have to do that.
And who would you rather get us out of this multi-trillion dollar debt? A politician or a businessman?
Not a businessman that lost almost $1 billion dollars in
that
1 year.
That's not a good businessman. Well,
he's living better than me and you times a million.
Without a doubt. Yeah, I'm sure of it.
Well, John, hang in there, and good luck to you come November.
And vote for Rauner, too, because he's trying to do the same thing. With this Democratic city and state, it's like atrocious of what's going on and what this state is going on.
Do you think Rauner's doing a good job?
He's trying to do what he can because you have to get past Madigan. Rauner's trying to get... so many years, I forget what I'm at a loss for words right now, term limits.
Name a world leader you admire, quick. no, don't. You don't have to. You're fine.
The dead Ronald Reagan.
All right, good.
All right, well, we get you, and thanks for talking and not yelling, because that's what this is all about. We have to talk to one another.
Yeah, just politicians are politicians. They're leeches. That's all you have to know. That's all it is.
Well, the system has to change then.
Yeah,
and I don't know if Trump is the man to change it, but
well
see.
He's got his flaws. Obviously, he's not presidential. There's no doubt about that. He his mouth speaks sometimes before his brain does. But
that's okay with you, John?
You know what? In the end run, what do you want? Hillary that lies constantly. She said on the TV the other day she's going to do about 50 different things. So if she does one or two, she's good.
What's Trump going to do?
He's going to do. He hasn't promised too many different things, a minuscule amount compared to Hillary.
No, he has, and Mexico's going to pay for them.
Well, maybe they will.
Mexico's going to pay for the bridges and airports, too.
That'd be all right. John, we have to
run.
Thank
you, John. We
appreciate
it. Thanks
for the call. Thank
you.
All right, thanks. All right, let's take a break. Everybody take a break. We'll get some news. Ryan Burrow has the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Ryan, thank you. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We're easy to reach, 312-981-7200. That's if you have a phone or a texting device.
I was just thinking that. You read my mind.
Yep. I've been using the English language for several years, Wendy.
How's that going?
Not as good as it could.
Not as well?
No.
I guess it's good.
It could be a lot gooder than it is. There were multiple reports of a story over the weekend, and on every report they used a word that I have no idea what it means, and they don't explain the word at all in the story. Like, I read the first account of it, and there's the word, and I go, I should probably know what that word is. I'll find another version of the story, and then I did. I found two other versions of the story. They all use the same word, but none of them explain what it is, and I know it would be easy then to just Google the word, but I'm frustrated with myself that I guess evidently this word is common.
I'm dying to know what the word is.
All right, I'll read you the story. It was about, I'll warn you right now, it was about a kid that was trapped on a roller coaster in Australia. Did you hear about this at all?
No.
This happened over the weekend. The story, this is from, all right, here are my sources. I've got the Daily Dot, which I've never been on that website before, but they had the headline, Child Trapped on Roller Coaster. I go, I better read this.
Is this your Aunt Dorothy's site?
Yeah, she's got her own website. It has to do with roller coaster news.
She is your aunt.
The Daily Dot, Yahoo, right, which is very reputable.
And Hacked.
And Mashable, which is the website I go to learn how to prepare potatoes. All right, so here is version number one. This is from the Daily Dot. This is my Aunt Dorothy's website. The Storm Coaster. Now, you'll know when I get to the word.
All right.
The Storm Coaster at SeaWorld in Australia broke down on Friday, trapping 8 people in a car, according to the Courier Mail. As the helicopters circled overhead, heavy winds bore down, and workers scrambled to rescue the passengers. One of the kids in the coaster did what anyone should do in a time of personal crisis. He dabbed. Here's another report of the story. Now, it goes on to talk about how these kids were rescued, but it never explains what exactly dabbing is. Here's another account. This is from Yahoo. In case roller coasters weren't a rickety mishmash of nightmares, this particular roller coaster broke down mid-ride at SeaWorld in Australia on Friday, leaving all on board teetering high above the grounds in high winds. But rather than cowering in fear, the kids on board celebrated the occasion with the saving power of the dab. Mashable does almost an identical story, again explaining that while the roller coaster was suspended up in the air, the kids did not panic, but instead one of them, the bravest, decided to use the time to dab. Now, let's say you're writing this story. Wouldn't you say to yourself, there's probably at least one or two people out there that don't know what dabbing is, because I have no idea what it is.
I don't have a clue what it is. You're sweating, so you dab your face with your handkerchief.
But that seems reasonable.
But that wouldn't take a brave kid to do it.
Right. It would take everybody to do it.
Well, do you need to flash back to the Super Bowl last year? You guys don't remember all of this?
What happened at the Super Bowl?
Well, the dab, this is the Cam Newton thing. Remember Betty White did it? You kind of put your nose in your elbow and kind of extend the other hand out. All right, look into the monitors right now.
All right, I'm watching you. Go ahead.
So it's like a bow kind of with one.
Yeah, it's what the cool kids are doing these days.
Oh, my God. Like bottle throwing?
If you watch, no, they're not hurting anyone.
No. The bottle flipping.
You'll see kids do it in the background sometimes. Like, you know, when they're live at a murder scene and there are all these kids gathered in the background. A lot of them are trying to do that.
Why is it called dabbing?
I don't know. What would you call it?
Acting like a dope.
And why has everyone on the planet keep this to themselves and not share this with myself or Wendy? Neither of us had ever heard of this.
During the pregame of the Super Bowl, Betty White did that because she said she was backing Cam Newton. Cam Newton would do that after he scored a touchdown.
All right.
I got to tell you, the texts are killing
everybody
me.
Knows it, but
no,
us?
No, I only know what dab means because I work with sixth graders. Ask your kids, they will know. I wish Dylan wasn't in school because I would call him. And then 708, I think this is from Dylan. You guys are really old.
Well, yes. There's that.
Confirmed.
All right, but let's say, and Ryan, I have no reason to believe what you just told us isn't true.
You're
the word of truth, is Ryan Burrow, is the word of
truth. Comes from the seventh floor. The truth always comes from the seventh floor.
Yeah. All right, but if you're one of the journalists writing this story, and every single one of them uses the word dab, wouldn't you explain it somewhere in the story?
Here's my point that I totally 100% back you. When news stories are written, it's like, former Beatle Ringo Starr,
right.
Like, duh.
Oh, that's where I know him from.
So you should
say
the kids
President
will...
Barack Obama.
Right.
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 So kids, a brave one dabbed, you would say...
For those of you who don't remember...
Or recall,
who are
that's
old.
What...
Right.
Cam Newton did.
During the
and
world...
Betty White.
During the Super Bowl last year. I kind of remember the move. I didn't know that it had a name. And I didn't know the name was commonplace enough to where you would just throw it into a story.
Lise?
This is not what dabbing is. Sorry, Ryan.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh.
Well, okay.
Oh, Ryan's wrong.
But go to the phones because Derek knows what
right.
it is.
All right, because in Ryan's defense, the dab is a dance move in which the dancer simultaneously drops the head while raising an arm and the elbow in a gesture that has been noted to resemble sneezing. Again, stupid.
Why would you do that on a roller coaster that could plummet?
I don't know.
I wouldn't create any imbalance within the roller coaster.
All right. God, we're old, but we may not be wrong. Derek, what is dabbing?
Okay. You two are dimwits.
Okay.
We know.
You got to know what the kids of today are doing. And they're not just smoking marijuana in the joint form anymore. It's some kind of concentrated oil that they use. You got to know who Action Bronson is. He's doing dabs all the time.
Who's that?
So liquid weed?
It's like a liquid weed form that they heat and then they put into some kind of glass bong pipe type of thing. These kids today, marijuana alone isn't enough. It's like a concentrated way of smoke marijuana.
So they're bringing their bongs on the roller coaster
I didn't see this story, but the minute you said that a bunch of teenagers decided to do something brave,
yeah, sure,
we're stuck in the middle of a roller coaster where everyone can see us. Let's get high. Sure, brilliant.
Well, why? They're just going to arrest you when the roller coaster comes down.
Well,
up,
I mean,
it's Australia.
In Australia. That's down under. So if they're stuck upside down on the roller coaster, aren't they right side up?
Yeah, it all makes sense now. All right, so
it is dabbing is basically the flash vaporization of cannabis concentrates.
Ding ding.
Oh.
That's why I didn't know because my friend Huggy Bear didn't tell me.
Don't ever listen to the seventh floor again.
All right, Derek.
Thanks, Derek.
Take back the dimwit.
No, it's too late. He will not retract his dimwitsity. Ryan, we're not blaming you. Your explanation
is partial credit, right?
I mean,
it is a thing.
I think you dab after you dab.
I thought it was a German beer. It is, isn't it?
That's dab.
Oh, is it
dab? Yes.
All right.
All right, well, let's take a break and get to the bottom of the dabbing, can we?
Yeah.
Dab nabbit.
Yes.
312-981-7200. Bill F. Wendy Snyder, 720.
With Brill Cream, a little dab will do you. Watch Brill Cream put life in dry hair and fun back into your life. Brill Cream gives your hair that look.
A little dab will do you.
A little dab will
so
do you, Wendy.
High right now.
A little dab will do you. We're telling you the story about these kids in Australia. They were at SeaWorld in Australia on the storm coaster. They got stuck and they decided to use their time dabbing. None of the accounts of the story that I could find online explain what dabbing is, but listeners and our own Ryan Burrow up in the newsroom have their own ideas of what it is.
Some are right, some are wrong. Janice is on the line. Hi, Janice.
Hi. As I told your answer person, I'm a 75-year-old grandma, and my granddaughters explained dabbing to me, and it was not the paranoid guy who thought they were whipping out their bongs explanation. It's the arm thing that Ryan was talking
yes,
about.
Yes, thank you.
And I've seen pictures on Facebook of the kids doing it, too. So
do we have any REO Speedwagon tickets we can send to her?
No, but Janice, yeah. I was wondering, you know, they're stuck on a roller coaster. It stopped. Why would they whip out their little e-cigarettes doing
They were probably taking pictures of themselves.
Dabbing.
Oh, maybe.
On the stuck roller coaster.
That makes sense.
You know, kids, Wendy?
They're crazy.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do.
Yep.
They're nutty. All right. Well, Janice, you saved the day. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
A vote for Ryan Burrow in the WGN newsroom.
All right. He may get another one because Sharon's on the line. Hey, Sharon.
Hi. Okay. Dabbing is the dance move because my daughter's 12 and they do it. They like their social studies teacher, she was telling me he raises his hand for everyone to be quiet.
Yeah.
And then the class raised up their hands, and then they started dabbing, and he started doing it with them. It's where, just like he described, it's like both hands are pointed off to the upper side.
Yeah.
And then, like, one is kind of folded in front of your head, your head's down, and you're like, it's hard to describe, and it's like, boom, you know, one arm is straight out to the side, and then the other one's kind of parallel with it, kind of crossed in front of your head.
No drugs are involved in this.
No,
okay,
my
good.
12-year-old is not doing that.
All right, that's good news for all of us.
I'm never allowed to dab in front of her feet either because it's too embarrassing. So I'm not allowed to dab, but I know what it is.
All right, perfect. Well,
thank you, Sharon.
We appreciate it, Sharon.
Kevin Richter wants to jump in live from sports now.
Yes, Kevin.
Kevin Powell.
Oh, Kevin Powell. Sorry. I miss my Kevin Richter.
The other Kevin. I miss him, too. It sounds like he's having a good time, though.
Yeah.
Dabbing, I don't know if this was mentioned earlier as well, was made famous by Cam Newton.
Yes.
Carolina.
That's what Ryan Burrow was telling us.
Hey, welcome to today, Kevin.
God, just like Bertrand when he's up there. He says something, and it's like, yeah, we already played the audio, but thanks.
Right.
That's all I have for you. Have a good day.
Thank Kevin, we'll talk to you second half.
Thanks for coming in early.
Kevin Powell.
Yes, yes. We'll chat White Sox news.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You saved the day.
Glad I could contribute.
It was almost enough to make me forget that a 75-year-old listener said the word bongs. Almost.
All right. Mike has a dab story. You're dab-tastic, Mike.
Oh, well, thank you. You're dab-tastic, too.
Awesome.
So, okay, since we're all guessing here, I'm going to be on the other side of the fence, and I'm going to say that it was a drug-related thing.
You think so? Why?
First of all, during the break or after you came back, you said this happened on something called the Stone Coaster.
No, the Storm Coaster, not the Stone Coaster. The Storm Coaster.
Okay. Well, nevertheless, you know, dabbing is a weed thing that all the kids are doing, and it is like a little paste. You know, it's like a concentrated form, like the other caller said.
Yeah.
And you just need a little dab. So
a little dab will do you.
A little dab will do you. It's very small. It's very discreet.
Yeah.
It doesn't leave any odor. And, you know, if these kids on the roller coaster were 12, yeah, maybe they're doing the dance. But if these kids were 17 or 18, maybe they were doing the other dance.
Well, it doesn't say how old the kids are. And, again, I'm still upset that journalists for a major news source like Yahoo don't even explain the word. They just assume everyone in the world knows what dabbing is.
Everyone
but,
us.
Everyone
you
but
know.
Us. Yeah.
I know. I don't know. It's strange the way everything has progressed now since everything has become designer and fun and chic.
Yep.
You know, so. Well, thanks for taking my call, you guys. See you
absolutely,
later.
Mike,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. And Debbie has the last word on this. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Yeah. It's actually both things. Because what happens is that when people dab the weed, it's such a concentrated hit that they pass out.
Yes.
And so that's the motion they make when they pass out. So that's why people call it dabbing.
Is that how? Is seriously, that's where it comes from?
They're simulating passing out from doing the dab.
Well, why would you do that then?
I don't know. My daughter's dance troupe tried to do it, and I said, absolutely not. She would not be dabbing.
But they didn't dab before they dabbed. Yours was just dabbing, the second dab.
Well, because it Cam Newton, who I used to absolutely love, made it popular as a thing, like Tebowing or Kaepernicking. You know, he started dabbing. And so all these kids think it's this cool thing. But no, you're stimulating somebody passing out because they took too big of a hit of weed. Like, not cool for a 12-year-old.
Debbie, is it possible that Cam Newton got it from Dabney Coleman, and that's why it's called dabbing?
Well, I would love that, then. Then I can love Cam Newton.
That would be all right. All right.
All right. Well, thank you, Debbie. Debbie. I'll call you Dabby from now on.
That's better. Thanks, Deb. Take care. All right. Do we know more now than when the story started? I'm not sure.
I don't know. I've got a bunch of LOLs saying listening to you 90-year-olds is really funny. I'm 25.
Keep off our lawns. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Ryan has the rest of the news. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, Ryan. Just enjoying the music of Simon and Garfunkel. Wendy, is there anything wrong with that? It's Phil Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I saw them, speaking of the White Sox.
Oh, I thought you meant Simon and Garfunkel.
I did. I saw Simon and Garfunkel at White Sox Park. They did a concert at White Sox Park when I was in college. It was fantastic.
Honestly?
Yeah. They were great. Despite the fact, I don't know if you know this little inside information for Simon and Garfunkel fans, they do not get along. Did you know that?
Their original name?
The original name of Simon and Garfunkel was Tom and Jerry.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good, music mother.
They put on quite a show, but I couldn't help. We had great seats. Well, not seats. We were standing because it was on
the field.
On the outfield. We were up very close, and all I kept thinking while enjoying the show was the disdain that Paul and Artie had for each other because you couldn't tell.
Paul and Artie?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess.
Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel.
I guess. Artie, I never heard him called Artie.
His friends.
Yes, that's right.
So, I'm just watching and I'm loving it. And then I would just look over and I go, but they don't like each other. That's hard. It's hard to fathom.
It is hard to fathom considering that they were together so long and made such beautiful music together.
Their voices together were just unparalleled.
Look at the Stones, though. Mick and Keith don't like each other.
I don't think it's as much.
Oh.
Is it as much as Simon and Garfunkel? Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you can compare how much someone hates somebody.
There's no good measure of that.
It's just like one of those things where I'm just here to make money. I don't need to talk to you. Don't look at me. I'm going to play the drums over here. All right, you do your thing.
But isn't it hard to imagine? Yeah.
There are so many weird bands, though, right? Some that just kind of come together and you know, rip off a quick album, and then they all part their ways.
Sure.
And then 5 years later, they come together to do something real quick. I mean,
right.
The Foo Fighters, I mean, Dave Grohl pretty much has everything set and ready to go, and then the other guys slip in there, and they play. And
go home.
And then go home, yeah.
Right.
So.
They hate each other.
No, I think they honestly like each other. Well, the Foo Fighters. Oasis was another one, right? They were brothers. Yeah,
they did not get along.
No.
But that's sibling rivalry.
But then wouldn't you start a band with somebody that you liked? Like if I was going to, the chances of me starting a band are very slim at this point.
Yeah, I want to know who you'd pick.
I'm thinking about it. I don't know. I would just get a cross-section of people. I'd get Paul Anka right off the bat.
Can I play the triangle?
Yeah, you want in? Ryan's in my band. He plays the triangle. But if I was going to start a band, the first thing I would do is I would get guys that I really got along with, because I'd go, boy, the hours are going to be long. There's going to be a lot of travel, a lot of big decisions. I'm going to get guys I like.
A lot of times on long bus rides, I'm sure.
Yes.
So maybe it all starts out happy and then kind of turns
just
sour.
Just disintegrates.
Maybe.
Well, with Simon and Garfunkel, by the end, the two disliked each other so much that they couldn't agree on what tracks to use for their final album, Bridge Over Troubled Water, and refused to record each other's suggestions.
How about that?
That presents a problem.
Right. Even with Lennon and McCartney, even though they had their differences, I think they had so much respect for each other and realized that they were better when the other one was there. I don't think with Simon and Garfunkel that exists or existed. Did you ever see early in Saturday Night Live when Paul Simon was the host? He starts singing a Simon and Garfunkel song, and then Charles Grodin snuck up behind him with an Art Garfunkel wig and just started singing alongside of him. And the whole bit was that Paul Simon goes, do you know how distracting that is to just stand there? And he goes, no, I thought you'd feel better having me looking like this. He goes, well, I don't. It makes it very hard to focus.
They have a list of other bands, too, on tonedeaf.com of bands that don't get along. The Beach Boys, I knew Mike Love and Brian Wilson had some issues with one another. And they were cousins.
Yeah, you throw that in. They always, the blanket term is always creative differences, and you can understand it. Everybody has
a certain...
I think
this was hate.
That might have been hate, creative hate, not just differences.
Guns N' Roses. But see, now I don't understand that, because they all fell apart and hated each other, but aren't they all back together again, including Axl and Slash?
Don't you think at some point you check your bank statement and you go, okay, when we were fighting and playing together, we had a lot more money than when we're getting along and not playing together. So they all just realize at some point it's probably best for us to pretend we like each other, go on the road, make some money.
But I don't, you know, I see a band and I'm like, God, they were good. I don't like think about them. Boy, I wonder what they did last night. Did they play cards together?
No, I understand that. But when you see, like, all right, there was a moment where Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel are singing, you know the song Old Friends?
Yeah.
All right. It's a beautiful song, and their voices together are just so beautiful. And I'm listening to this, but all I kept thinking is, how could you fake that? How could you be up there singing that Old Friend song with a guy who should be your old friend, but you're just going, God, I hate this guy. I hate the man next to me singing the Old Friend song with me.
Did you ever see cartoons where people have dollar signs in their eyes instead of pupils?
I guess it's an element of that, isn't it?
Kings of Leon.
They not get along?
Being in a successful touring band can place a lot of strain on a relationship, and siblings aren't immune to the pressure. Early on in the band's career, Kings of Leon members Nathan and Caleb Followill would constantly be at each other's throats, with Nathan even once breaking Caleb's arm during a brawl in the recording studio.
That's beautiful.
What is up with brothers fighting?
That's beautiful. You know who else I heard did not get along? Mm. Bob Dylan.
With who? Himself?
Just
his reflection?
Yeah. He was not a fan of his own reflection. He did not get along.
Hey. Who's that?
He's ruining it for everybody. I couldn't do on a daily basis. If you were on a tour with a guy every day, I mean, because, all right, mostly you're just on stage with him, but that's a pretty important time.
And there has to be a lot of trust that you have each other's back. And if you hate someone, right. How would you trust them?
Just the opposite.
I don't get it.
Mess with his pedals.
Guitar pedals or drum pedals?
Any pedals.
Go ahead and say your favorite kind of pedal for the guitar.
Well, my favorite pedal for the guitar is the Sojourn Baby Wah, the finest of all pedals, Wendy. You know that.
I do. Joe, you saw Guns N' Roses. Were they fighting?
No, they weren't fighting, but it was professional. But you could tell that when they were walking, when Slash would be walking across the stage and Axl, they didn't even look at each other.
Did
Axl try and trip him?
No. No.
Good.
But it was, you could tell it was cold. They had no use for each other other than performing that night.
Does that affect the way you enjoy their work at all, though? Don't you think about that while you're watching them?
No. I enjoyed it. No, I'm glad they got back together. I took my son. He's a guitar player and was really into Guns N' Roses.
Sure.
I took him to go see a good band, and I'm glad they got together. But yeah, if they don't get together, nobody's going to throw a benefit for them. They've made plenty of money. They don't need to tour anymore.
I guess, yeah. Yep. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you, Joe.
All right, you're welcome.
Take care.
The Van Halen saga continues, too, with hating Sammy Hagar, and now Sammy Hagar was busting. Eddie Van Halen said that he wrote the bass solos for Mark Anthony, and Sammy said that's not true, but now Sammy's saying, hey, you know, I think we should all just get along. Is Sammy looking for something to do?
I think he may be. Yeah. I think there's something to that.
Because you got Alex Van Halen on drums, Eddie on guitar, you've got Wolfgang on bass.
Uh-huh.
Eddie's son, so if they could just get another Van Halen to sing, then they keep it all in the family.
Right.
Interesting. People want to talk about this.
All right, it's bands that don't get together. You think they would. They're singing together. They're playing together. They sound great, but off stage, not so happy. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I used to be in the band called Manfred Manfredini. Do you remember that band? We didn't all get along.
Did he?
That was our biggest hit.
Oh, boy. All right, this is something that surprised me. We are talking about bands that don't get along. How did this whole thing start?
Simon and Garfunkel. Producing was playing some Simon and Garfunkel, and it reminded me of when I saw them, and my experience was clouded by the fact that I knew that they did not get along.
See, that would... I guess I would think about that.
Yeah.
But did you still enjoy the music?
Loved the music.
They're pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Dan, you saw a documentary of a band?
Yes, the band, I noticed that you played one of their songs just coming in from the break. The Police, there's a documentary. I'm pretty sure you can catch a legit version of it on YouTube that is about the Police, and there's a section in Andy Summers is talking about the physical brawls that Stuart Copeland and Sting would have in the studio and in rehearsals over things like, no, play the A-flat chord here instead of the sus4 and things like that, like, you know, in a bridge or a chorus.
And it got
whatever.
Physical because of this.
Oh yeah, bloody fist banging, you know, wrestling. And Annie described it as like, I would just be back like kind of like not, you know, staying out of the way and just saying things like, I'll play whatever chord you guys decide on.
Just don't hit me. Oh, that's terrible.
It's called Can't Stand Losing You. That's Surviving the Police.
That's ironic.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
All right. Well, thank you for... I love the Police. Boy, what a power trio they were.
Mm-hmm.
I saw them at Comiskey Park for their Synchronicity tour. It was like a loop day in the park, and it was the Police. It was the Pretender, or Joan Jett. Santana was there.
I saw the first time I saw them was when Roxanne had just hit. So
yeah.
It would have been the first time in Chicago, maybe. It was at Danny Serafin's club out in Schaumburg. I can't recall the name right now. It's a big rock club, it's a big space.
But it does hurt to know that despite that magic, they did not get along.
No. Did you remember it, Dan?
What's that?
The club, we were talking over each other.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think. It was Danny Serafin of Chicago, the drummer, owned it, or part owner, and it was in Schaumburg or Woodfield, near the Woodfield Shopping Mall there.
It wasn't Eric the Reds.
No.
Or the Stay Out All Night Discotheque.
No.
It started with a C. It wasn't changes. I'll think of it. All but right. it was there that night was Nick Lowe and Rock Pile.
Oh man!
And they had their hit. I think that was them with Sharona. Is that right?
That was the Knack.
Well, no, the Knack was there as well.
Yeah.
And they were it was like a threefer, and I think Sharona was already a hit when
My
Rock
Sharona.
Band came. Or My Sharona was already hit when it came out.
Yeah.
And the Police were first. They were like the warm-up band.
Wow.
No one had really ever heard of them. And it turns out that more than half the crowd couldn't wait for the Police to start. And when they started with Roxanne, and the place went nuts.
Sure.
And no air conditioning in the place.
Oh,
it was
nice.
85 outside. It was 97 in the place. It was like Blarney's Island. People were taking their clothes off to stay cool.
Beginnings was the name of the club.
Oh, good.
That's it. Thank you.
All right, Dan. Thank you.
Thanks,
we
Dan.
Appreciate it. I loved the Police. I was reading something where no one likes Sting.
Is that true? I wonder why.
I know he's
a perfectionist, but he gets the job done. He's so good at what he does.
All right. You got to hear this story.
All right.
Bob, you went to see Simon and Garfunkel as well as Bill?
Yeah, hey, gang. Yeah, I saw their last farewell concert both Friday and Saturday night. It was pretty cool. I kind of big fan of them, and I didn't know that they got their influence from the Everly Brothers. And
yeah.
They said, in fact, let's bring them on stage. And what a magical moment to have them come out on stage. And it was kind of funny because it's a spoiler alert for Saturday. I was sitting there Saturday, and I didn't want to tell everybody around me what's about to happen, but during their live concert, they made a comment that they met when they were in a play, I believe, Alice in Wonderland, and that Art had one role and Paul had the other. And when Art said he had his role, Paul Simon jived in that it was a supporting role, kind of as a little bit of a dig.
Yeah.
But they said, we've known each other, you know, as they said, for whatever, 6 or 7 years. And Paul goes, and we've been arguing ever since. So it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing. But I will say during the live performance that some of the songs, like I would say Art's signature song was Bridge Over Troubled Waters.
Yeah.
And at the very end of it, when Art really lets it go, you can actually see Paul on the DVD too as well. You can see where Paul Simon actually steps back. You don't even see him. He's like in black now. And Art gets to finish the entire song. You know, so I think they respected each other's musical talents, but without a doubt, they never did get along. That's why they didn't tour for so many years.
Maybe you'll know this, Bob, because I can't remember, but you talked about their love of the Everly Brothers. Didn't they sing Wake Up Little Susie at that White Sox Park concert?
They did, right? In honor of the Everly Brothers. I think they made mention that people thought they got their influence from the Big Bopper or Little Richard. And that's where they said, if people really want to know, we really got our influence from the Everly Brothers. And the Everly Brothers did a very acoustic, great version of Dream. And that's a funny thing. The Everly Brothers, they didn't speak to each other. Those were brothers. They didn't speak to each other for, I think, 20 years,
wow.
15 years. And they came back out with kind of a re-hit called Something of a Nightingale. But kind of funny, both those groups loved each other, and they didn't talk to one another.
That's amazing.
I don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to see a great concert on DVD, Bill, if you're a fan of Simon & Garfunkel, see if you can rent their last concert, the DVD, in New York. It really
is. In Central Park,
that
one? Their
songs were wonderful. Pardon me?
Is it the Central Park concert?
I think that was their last concert. No, there is a Central Park concert, but no, all I can tell you is their last live performance together. They finished in New York. Yeah, it could have been there, but I remember them.
Bob, we got to run. I'm sorry, man. It's great talking to you about.
I'll find it, Bob. Thank you.
Seriously,
I'll find it.
Look for it, Bill.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes like we're just sitting around the kitchen table talking, and I feel like that, and I want it to continue, but we do have to do a quick break and get.
You don't
want to
get Steve Bertrand mad.
No,
you don't want to get him upset. All right, we'll take a break. Steve with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thank you very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We welcome you to the show. Later on, Kevin Powell, who is not our Kevin. Every show, if you're new to WGN, every show has their own Kevin. Kevin Powell is the property of Rokan Productions, the show that's on after us. He does sports here at WGN. He'll be on with us later to talk about what the White Sox do now. If you haven't heard, they have ridded themselves of manager Robin Ventura. Although, Steve, it was Robin Ventura's decision, right, to not return. It wasn't the White Sox management, was it?
I was going to ask you that earlier when you guys were talking about it. It sounds as if it was that way. I mean, there was reporting last week that he could stay if he wanted.
Yeah, that's the feeling I'm getting, is that it was he who decided. We'll ask Kevin Powell in a little bit if it was Robin Ventura's decision or White Sox ownership's decision. Either way, he will not be the manager of the Chicago White Sox next season. That role will be taken by Rick Renteria, who spent a year as the Cubs manager before they got Joe Maddon.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Well-liked.
Yeah, very well-liked man. And I was shocked to hear, I think you did it in the report earlier, that there is only one Latino manager in Major League Baseball. Out of the 30 teams, only one.
That must have been Ryan. I didn't
was
do
it
that.
Ryan?
I didn't realize
yeah,
that.
It was Ryan, yeah. And that shocks me.
Was Ryan? So, why?
Yeah. Because that seems like your territory, not Ryan Burroughs' territory.
Ryan could pick up on that.
That's something. All right. How about this? Elon Musk, he is the business magnate, the entrepreneur, the inventor. He's the guy behind Tesla Motors. He has a company called SpaceX. And he was just quoted as saying over the weekend, and I find every part of this fascinating, but it's the last part that really sticks to me. He's got a plan with his company, SpaceX, and what they want to do is, in the next 50 to 100 years, they want to build a shuttle to where we on Earth can go to Mars, and maybe we can just visit Mars, or maybe we can stop and live there for a couple of years if we want, and then come back and forth, back and forth. It all sounds very exciting, except that he's using this in his sales pitch. He says that the first colonists to Mars should be prepared to die.
Well, who's going to want to go first?
I think that's bad marketing.
Yeah.
I think that that's very poor marketing. I would leave that part of my presentation out. I would tell them all the good stuff on Mars. It's not very crowded. Do you like
Mars bars?
They make Mars bars there.
But you guys, if the first person that goes there is going to die, then there will not be a second person, because who's going to volunteer to go?
He's not specific, Wendy, on if it'll be the very first person. He's just saying that those first colonists should be prepared to die. Maybe he's saying just a small percentage. But I would leave that out of the pitch. I would totally keep that quiet.
I have no desire to go to Mars.
I would go, like, if it was something that had been going on for a long time and seemed like it's a fairly foolproof move.
You know how long it would take you to get there? You don't have that much vacation time.
That's true.
I mean, was it take 3 years to get there?
Yeah, but they would figure out a way to put you in deep sleep. They found a way. They figured out a way to make you sleep the whole time. They show you episodes of Windy City Live. The first people who fly with SpaceX to Mars should be okay with the possibility that the decision could cost them their lives. This according to SpaceX company founder and CEO Elon Musk.
Oh, what's that? Kim Kardashian and Kanye West have agreed to go?
Yeah, they're going. They're heading out.
I shouldn't pick on her. She's been attacked.
No, she's been attacked. SpaceX, that's his company, aims to ferry 1 million people to the red planet over the next 50 to 100 years, using the Interplanetary Transit System, that's the ITS, they call it.
Oh, they're so late all the time. I've waited for them.
Right.
And when it's cold, it's awful.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's the worst.
The worst. That is the rocket spaceship combo that Musk unveiled on Tuesday. During a talk at the International Astronomical Congress, the IAC.
Weren't you there at that meeting?
I showed up for a little bit. Had some cocktail weenies and headed out. This is boring, I said. This was located in Guadalajara, Mexico. Musk painted a picture of a not-too-distant future in which 1,000 or more ITS spaceships, each loaded with 100 or 200 settlers, zoom off to Mars simultaneously from Earth orbit. But it's naive to expect that everything will work perfectly from the start, he said. I think the first journeys to Mars are going to be really dangerous. The risk of fatality will be high. There's just no way around it, Musk said at the IAC, adding that, for this reason, he would not suggest sending children on these flights.
Who does he suggest sending?
You know, What, Steve?
Did he say they're all going to take off simultaneously?
He wants that to be, yeah.
So doesn't that make you think of the mad world?
Yes.
All these spaceships trying to make it to Mars.
Yeah, everybody at the same time.
Right.
Here, now again, I'm no Elon Musk, but I would stagger those flights a little bit to reduce your chance of crashing into other space shuttles. Just one of the ideas I would like to give him
free. No wonder you were at that symposium.
I went to the symposium. It would be basically, he said, I know this is a weird sentence, but bear with me. It would be basically, are you prepared to die? If that's okay, then you know you're a candidate for going.
So what? Terminally ill people? People who are old? People who just have... I don't get it.
I think they just want people with an adventuresome spirit.
That may die. No.
I'm bad with that part.
Yeah. I don't get that.
All right. Here's a hypothetical. Let's say they said to you, we've only chosen X amount of people to be on this trip. It would normally cost you to go back and forth to Mars some astronomical price. But because you're media, Wendy, we want you to be there and spread the good word about Mars travel. You get to go for free. We'll pay for everything. We'll even pay you a little bit to take the trip.
I'd say ask Bill. I'm good. I'm going to stay back here.
I would not go on it. I would not go.
Does Steve Bertrand Travel go there?
Steve, is
not yet.
Not
no,
yet, but you're working on a trip.
I am working on a... No, not even working on one.
Musk said he'd like to go to Mars, but it's unclear if he'll be among the Red Planet Vanguard.
Well, he knows people.
He does know people.
If he wanted to do it.
Right, he could go. He's got the money. In a teleconference with reporters on Tuesday, after an IAC talk, he said he wasn't sure if he'd be aboard the first ever Mars colony ship.
He won't be. He said you may die. Why would he go?
I don't know. I know there's a level of people out there who say I'd be doing it, but I'd be doing it for the good of mankind. Because at some point,
who's saying that? Give me one name of somebody who would do that for the great of mankind.
Well, you would be. I mean, think about it. If you're an astronaut, you know that what you're doing is incredibly dangerous, but you're doing it for the good of civilization.
I guess if you're already an astronaut, you know the risks of going up into space anyway.
Sure.
But just, I'm thinking just, you know, your common folk walking up and down Michigan Avenue.
Right.
No one's going to go.
No.
Even if it's an all-expense-paid trip.
I wonder.
You could die.
Yeah, that's the part if I'm Elon Musk.
That's the deal breaker?
I say, well, you know there's a chance. I mean, really, every time you walk out the door, you know that there's a chance of that. But the fact that Mars is
this
so new
intensifies that risk. How much?
A billionfold.
What
right?
if you were in Dom DeLuise's rocket?
Then I would do it.
Yeah.
Then I would do it. He said he wasn't sure, like I said, if he would be on that first ever Mars colony ship. Now, they're still looking at, they think that we're still looking 40, 50, 60 years down the line, realistically. So it's not the kind of thing, they're not going to call you up and go, hey, Wednesday's the day. It's still quite a ways down the line. This ship may or may not be called the Heart of Gold, named after a vehicle in Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Here's what he says. I would definitely need to have a very good succession plan because the probability of death is quite high. Well, he's not. He just keeps mentioning death. Is quite high on that first mission. And I'd like to see my kids grow up and everything. So there are some pros and cons there, he said.
Mostly cons. And I don't mean row.
So far, mostly cons. Hey, you know what? It would be the trip of a lifetime. What would be more exciting than
Jamaica.
Visiting... Well,
I'd rather just go there, although not now because there's a hurricane around
there. Right, right. Musk has long said that he founded SpaceX in 2002 chiefly to help help humanity colonize Mars. Becoming a multi-planet species would serve as an insurance policy, minimizing the risk of humanity's extinction should something terrible happen here on Earth.
So people are already moving out of the country if Trump becomes president. Right. Are now people going to go? Those are your people who are going to volunteer right there.
Right, right.
Give me Mars or give me Trump.
Right. All right. We'll take a break and then more show. Would you go to Mars?
Nope.
It seems dangerous. Elon Musk says it.
I'd rather have Donald Trump as president.
Also dangerous in a different way. That's more orange than red. Mars is your red planet. Trump is your orange president. All right, we'll take a break, and then we've got more show. Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Left, and it's Wendy Snyder. I applaud anyone with a sense of adventure. They think that somewhere around 50 years from now, we'll have the ability to visit Mars. The company is called SpaceX. The founder, the CEO, is Elon Musk, who's got quite a track record behind him. He's the man behind Tesla. He's been behind other projects, most of them very, very successful. So he's saying in about 50 years, we'll be ready to shuttle people back and forth between him and here and Mars. However, he adds, those first Mars colonists should be prepared to die. Not a pleasant thought.
That is a deal breaker for me. Plus, we're not going to be here 50 years from now, probably. Which really depresses me when I say that out loud.
Sad. That is sad.
All right, sorry. Yeah. Tim, you would go to Mars?
Yes, I would.
Really?
I grew up watching the guy, watching those spaceships go off from Canaveral to the Apollo missions, the Gemini missions, the Mercury missions. And eventually, as I got to be an adult, I applied to be in that teacher in space program.
Really?
Yes, I did. I was not, obviously I wasn't picked, but yeah. I would have gone in a heartbeat. I would go to Mars in a heartbeat.
So when the Challenger disaster took place and Krista McAuliffe was on board, a teacher, did that make you want to go more or less? Like, how did that affect you?
I remember distinctly I was home for the day. I had been sick. I had a call in sick for work. And I happened to be watching it on television.
Krista McAuliffe, you're talking?
Yeah.
Yes. And I was devastated by it because I knew it would put our space program back. I'm a firm believer that we need to be expanding our knowledge and expanding our horizons by going off into space. I sincerely believe we should have had a colony on the moon already. We should have never stopped going there. And I think this is a step in the right direction to start colonizing and expanding humanity through the solar system and through the universe.
Yeah, we can ruin another planet then. That's what would happen.
Well, I don't know about that. You could be right, Wendy, that we could ruin another planet. But if there are other aliens out there, this is how we're going to prove to them that we're capable of beating them, perhaps, and hopefully on peaceful grounds.
You've watched a lot of movies, because I have too, Tim, and it is kind of exciting to think about, you know, coming together with, you know, aliens. It would be kind of cool.
Right. It would be cool. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're out there. I'm a believer when Arthur C. Clarke said that if there really are aliens out there, they would have let us know already.
Yeah, maybe. And Tim, there's also the element at some point, spoiler alert, the Earth will no longer be able to sustain our life at some point. Hopefully, I'm talking way, 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 way in the future. But as Elon Musk says, we have to have a plan B, and that's right. Colonizing other planets.
That is the plan B. Exactly. I think you're right there, Bill.
Hmm. All right.
Pretty scary. You're a brave man, Tim.
Well, I don't know about that, but I have a sense of adventure.
Do they keep in touch with you, like, once you apply for something like this? Like, once they say no, is that the end of it? Or do they keep in touch with you and say, hey, we still have you on file, we're still thinking about you? Does that happen?
No, that doesn't happen. I do get notices that, you know, they have other programs that might be suitable for teachers in space and stuff. They don't personally, they'll just send me, like, an email or a mail saying that we're having this program, we're thinking about it. If you want to apply, do that.
Yeah. Interesting.
I would have to go through the whole process. Right now, at my age of 67, I probably wouldn't pass anything. But yeah.
Well, keep your fingers crossed, Tim. Who knows? Maybe Elon Musk will be looking for
maybe.
You.
Maybe.
That'd be nice. All right.
Well, thank you, Tim.
For calling. That's a brave man.
Didn't John Glenn fly when he was in his 70s? Wasn't his last flight sometime when he was in his 70s?
Yeah, he went up there not too long ago.
Right. A few years ago?
I guess.
I mean, I know he gets preferential treatment because he's John Glenn.
And he's had all the training, you know,
right.
Just taking a civilian.
Yeah.
It would maybe be more difficult on your body. You wouldn't know because you've never been in space before.
I don't even know. Like, if they opened up, and they've talked about this for years, open up the possibility of private citizens being able to go back and forth to the moon, even though it would be a great conversation starter. I'm not positive.
Hey,
guess where I've been?
Party, you know. Yeah. Hey, Bill, nice to meet you. I've been to the moon. You
sorry,
know?
I was late. I was at the moon. Where
it's
were
great.
You?
Could you pass me the mints?
A conversation.
I don't know.
Starter.
I mean, it would be so.
You can do that on your own now.
Yeah, I guess. But
you don't need the moon.
I still tell people I've been there a couple times.
Your family loves you to the moon and back.
Tell people you played tennis with John Lovitz.
Yeah, I got stories, but I mean. I would there's look, I know they wouldn't send me there unless it was safe, but I'd be so nervous.
Oh, they'd still send you there if it wasn't safe.
Would they? But it'd be such bad press for them. Let's say the moon shuttle thing started up in a week and they just pick people at random and they say you get to go to the moon.
You can say no.
I think I would say no. I'm pretty
really?
Sure I would say no. Yeah.
I know you would say no. Bertrand, I could see doing it.
I love adventure and stuff.
That's too much adventure.
That's too much adventure, isn't it?
And how long does it take to get to the moon?
You can get there in a couple days.
What, bang, zoom depends to the moon.
On,
how long would that be?
Traffic.
Yeah, I guess.
But I like to consider myself a brave person.
That's too brave. That's not your average, ordinary brave.
Yeah, I guess. It's a whole different
You'd look great in the space suit, though.
I'd wear the space suit regardless. Once they invite me, I go, hey, you know what? Send the spacesuit over. Let me try the spacesuit on.
Would it be like Halloween where you wear your costume before it's even Halloween?
Yeah.
You just come to work every day with the spacesuit and a baseball cap, of
course. A baseball helmet instead of a space helmet. I'm telling you, it's going to work. All right, we need to take a break. Steve has the news, and then there's more show coming your way right after that. So stay where you are. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Well, at the very beginning of the show, part one of the show this morning at 10 o'clock, we were talking about how your Chicago White Sox and half my Chicago White Sox. I'm
Which
a fan
he
of
really
both teams.
Means it, people.
I do mean it.
I've questioned them for years. But
I love both teams equally.
I only like one.
Well, that's all right. Most people are of that way of thinking. A new manager for the White Sox, Robin Ventura, out after 5 years, right?
Three too long.
I guess. Kevin Powell joins us right now from the sports department to talk about this changing of the guard for the White Sox. This isn't a surprise, is it, Kevin?
No, and I think it does next to nothing to get this fan base excited, interested. I mean, I can't remember a more frustrated White Sox fan base ever, really, at least for me.
You being one of them, too, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit crazy to me that you didn't really put a whole nationwide search for a manager. You go from mediocrity that you've seen for the past eight seasons now to a guy who was a part of this team, the bench coach, and it just does pretty much nothing to get this fan base excited. Can he manage? Sure. A lot of people, you know, think highly of him.
This is Rick Renteria we're talking
correct.
About, by the way. Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me that he was named the new manager, but it doesn't really do much to excite you. I think the biggest question mark, and Rick Hahn, the general manager, was asked about it today at the press conference, is what's the plan here? Is the plan to rebuild this team completely, trade away your top players and get some prospects and rebuild your farm system? Or is it do what they've done now for the past few seasons and believe that they can compete for a championship? And do they add pieces around Chris Sale and Jose Quintana and Jose Abreu? So, and he didn't really address it. He says, you guys will see over the next few months what we do. That's what I'm most interested in seeing, because this is sort
of... How long of a deal is this for Renteria? Sorry to interrupt you.
I don't know if they said the...
He's on a monthly contract.
Well, that's what I kind of would hope. That would make me feel better. I swear they should get Ozzie Guillen back. That'll never happen. But we need some flair, some... Mm-hmm. Energy, some spark.
Yeah, if you look at the sell, I mean, their attendance was, I think, the bottom three of the league. If you looked over at the past few weeks, there's been, I mean, it looks completely empty. There's no fans there. The interest is low.
This is the first year we have not gone to a game.
Yeah.
I feel bad.
I think there's a lot of people like that, Wendy.
Even that first month of the season, and the White Sox were off to the best start that
they
I can remember. They were
one.
Amazing first season. they were still having trouble, and I know it's the beginning of the season and the weather's still cold, but they just weren't drawing fans even when they were the best team in the American League.
No, and, you know, Rick Renteria said today that he thinks the team underachieved, and I think we've heard that for a few years now, that the White Sox front office and, you know, they say, well, we underachieved. Okay, well, maybe that is the case. And if that is the case, then you do absolutely have to point the finger at the manager. Or is it just simply because there's a lack of talent on the team and the White Sox are sort of misguided on thinking that, yeah, we can compete with this roster, when in reality, no, I don't think you can with the sort of talent that you've put together. I mean, this team has a ton of holes in it. A bad bullpen, the outfield, starting pitching was an issue other than Sale and Quintana, really. So is it a lack of talent, or is it underachieving?
Or is it both?
Are these problems more evident because on the north side of town, you've got the best team in baseball all of
really?
A sudden?
Really? Who's that?
That would be Chicago Cubs are having a good year, Wendy. I know that you refuse to acknowledge this, but they've
having
had
a decent
fairly
year.
Decent season. So all of a sudden, problems that might have slipped away, because you could go, well, yeah, it's a city with two baseball teams that are underachieving. Not this time around, right?
Yeah, I think that probably adds to it. I mean, again, it's the frustrated fan base, the White Sox fan base, and yeah, they have to watch what the Cubs have done. Now, if the White Sox do elect to go with a full rebuild, which what the Cubs did 5 years ago when Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer came in, and obviously it's paid off. Second straight postseason, heavy favorites, all those sorts of things. Do you trust Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams to get to deliver the same results? Meaning if they do go for the rebuild and they do decide to trade Chris Sale and Jose Quintana and whoever else that they may elect to move, do you trust those guys can get the prospects, a fair amount of prospects, because that's really what they would be looking for, is to restock their farm system. Do you trust Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn can get a fair return in those players? Now, Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, I mean, two of the best baseball minds out there, especially Theo Epstein.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the Red Sox now. If the Red Sox and Cubs face off in the World Series, it'll essentially be the Theo Epstein World Series, because his fingerprints are all over
both
teams. He did.
Yeah.
So do you trust that if you move Chris Sale and Jose Quintana and then a year goes by and you say, yeah, we're in rebuild mode, wait for these guys to come up, they're going to be great, and then they come up and they don't produce. Okay, well, then that was really a big, giant waste to trade away two assets like Jose Quintana and Chris Sale.
Right.
You can't miss. When the Cubs were doing that and moving some pieces around, I think it was a little bit different, because some of the players they were moving around were either, you know, contracts expiring or a little bit older, and they elected to go young. With the White Sox, it's interesting because Chris Sale and Jose Quintana are both young pitchers, two of the best pitchers in baseball, and they have extremely team-friendly contracts. So it's a little bit tougher of an area for the White Sox to just sell off those guys. You know, I mean, I think the Cubs, when that happened, it was like, okay, that guy we can do, I don't even see that guy with the Cubs in a few years anyways. With Chris Sale, you could see him pitching on the south side for another, I think his contract runs through 2020, so another,
if he doesn't
years.
Mess it up behaviorally.
Correct.
You don't give him sharp scissors.
Don't give him scissors.
Scissors are a problem for him.
Don't give him ugly uniforms to wear.
Shane wants to weigh in on this. Hey, Shane, we're talking to Kevin Powell about the White Sox.
You're
I
not
won't
even
say
claiming
our.
Them?
Well, mine.
All right.
The team on the south side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Shane,
okay,
your thoughts?
Let me start by saying go Cubs. And for the White Sox, I think they could have chosen somebody better for their manager than Renteria. He didn't do all that great on the Cubs.
That's what Kevin was saying.
Corey is still out there. Choose him.
Who was your option?
Joe Torre, if he's still out.
Yeah, I think he's done managing.
He
might come back.
Joe Torre, I doubt, would come back to the Chicago to manage the Chicago White Sox. He has a pretty nice position with the league front office. I don't see him coming back to managing. But, I agree, though, that there should have been probably – I mean, Rick Hahn said that they did have multiple guys, on the list, but they said they didn't feel a need to go look outside the organization because they didn't think there was anybody more qualified or could be more qualified than Rick Renteria. Those are not my words. Those are Rick Hahn words, the general manager of the White Sox. So they elect to just stick with Rick Renteria, who was around for a very disappointing season this year.
Yeah, there could have been somebody else they could have chosen better.
Did they look at all? I know you mentioned that before,
they
Kevin,
must have
but...
to some extent, because it's one day past the season and they already named him. Like, usually, if they weren't already looking, they'd spend a week or 10 days or 2 weeks just kind of searching and finding out who's available, but they named him immediately.
Right. I think they've known for really the past month, because Robin had mentioned that he had talked with Rick throughout the entire final month of the season, so... I think it was pretty much decided that Robin wasn't going to return. So when that decision was sort of settled, it was obviously, okay, well, who do we move forward with? And Robin
Sits near Robin that we could get?
Who sits near Robin while they lose games?
Thank you, Shane.
Rick Renteria.
Yeah, he sits right by him. Yep.
So I think people wanted something, as you said, Wendy, a little more excitement, something to fire up the fan base, fire up this team.
Yeah, like David Blaine.
Right. No.
People like David Blaine.
I mean, unless maybe this is a sign that a rebuild is coming and Rick Renteria is just sort of a holdover manager until...
Boy, that'd be twice.
It'd be twice for him, which would be really... You feel bad for the guy.
If you're him, would you even come to Chicago anymore if he got this happen to him twice?
I don't know, but if that's the plan is the rebuild and they're telling themselves, well, Rick is here anyways, let's just keep Rick while we sort of unravel this thing and things get a little rocky and...
He's like a seat filler at the Oscars.
I was just going to say that.
He is. He's like the baseball...
Or a placeholder.
That's right.
That's what do you think we are?
No, that's what he was for the Cubs, and... when Joe Maddon became available, it was, sorry, Rick.
That's it.
We appreciate your efforts here for one season, but we're going to go get the best manager in baseball.
Kevin, how about this? Rick Renteria is the only Hispanic manager in the major leagues out of 30 teams.
Mm-hmm. That is shocking to me.
Yeah, that was something that when he was brought to the Cubs, that was something that was initially talked about was his way, he's able to communicate. You can
right.
speak Spanish, you know, so that was a big selling point as well, especially with the Cubs when they had some players from Latino players, so I think that helps. But yeah, it is
Kosuke
surprising.
Fukudome. He could talk to Kosuke Fukudome.
Yes,
if you wanted
Bill,
to.
Exactly.
Japanese. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's it's surprising. He's the only one in all of baseball, considering how many Latino players there are.
That's
in
shocking.
The league. Yeah. So I think you know, they mentioned that. Robin Ventura didn't say specifically that was a reason, but it certainly helps when you can communicate with a lot of guys who can't even speak English.
Yeah, I guess. Kevin, thank you. We're not shocked. We are not shocked by this news, but I guess we were hoping for something more. No disrespect, but
White Sox baseball. We'll know a whole lot more throughout the winter. You know, the winter meetings for baseball is when things really start to heat up in terms of trade talk. So
we do meetings well, at least.
Yes.
So. Yeah.
So true. So
good
true.
White Sox meetings.
Dynamite meetings.
No
on
question.
The side.
Kevin, thank you. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Hey, before you go to a break,
can
I tell you, we were following a story out of Hammond, Indiana, where police were looking for a 20-year-old woman and her 2-month-old daughter.
Yes.
They've been found safe. So,
oh, good.
Good news. Happy ending there.
Very, very good news. Thanks, Steve. More after this. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right. The phone lines are full with people who are suggesting various managers for the Chicago White Sox. I have to be honest with you. I've always heard that a manager gets you or wins you or loses you between 5 to 10 games a year, and that's probably fairly accurate. I'm not sure that that's enough. There's something more that the White Sox are lacking than a, with all due respect to Robin Ventura, a more dynamic manager.
It's just not coming together at all.
You can only do so much, and I think everybody's hopes were lifted so much. If you're a White Sox fan, that first month, right out of the box, they looked to be not just a great team, but an unbelievable team,
and then
it fell apart.
It fizzled. It's, you know, we lost Adam LaRoche and his son.
Yep.
What was his son's
name? Little Drake LaRoche.
That's
as soon as Drake was gone, the season was over.
Down the tubes.
Mike. Let him manage. Get Drake LaRoche to manage that team. You'll see a difference.
What do you think that would help, Mike?
I think the problems in professional sports is that people get these guaranteed contracts, and whether they produce or not. I'll give you a real good example in Chicago. Derrick Rose, if he had a hangnail, he wasn't playing.
Yeah.
And he's still getting his millions, but he's on the bench because, his thumb hurts. Okay, Derrick won't be playing this game. Well, his knee aches. We won't be playing. It went on all last year. It's just sickening.
He was a little accident prone, was Derrick Rose. But to your point, there is something to be said for that these guys make pretty much the same amount of money whether they succeed or fail. I think most athletes want to succeed, but
That's why they should get paid by the number of games they play in and how well they perform. There ought to be look, I worked in a factory for years and I was on piecework, and if I only got so many pieces out, that's all I got.
Kind of agree with what Mike is saying, because, you know, yes, you get this signing bonus and you get this great salary, but look at Jay Cutler, and I'm sorry to bring this up, but look at how much money he got, and do you feel he's worth it?
No.
Yeah. Okay, there's a prime example right there.
But let me, can I throw somebody on the other side of this? Kyle Schwarber was expected to be a major component for the Cubs this year. He got injured on the third or fourth game of the season. He's done for the year through no fault of his own.
But injuries, I think, should be
different.
Yeah.
That's different. An injury, I mean, a severe injury, that's a whole different ball game. Excuse the pun.
Well, that worked. Good. It paid off.
All right. Well, I like your idea, Mike. I kind of think that's a good idea. Incentives. Because you want to do better, right?
They give – most of the players have some incentives built into their contract, but still, the base salary is such that you go, I'm rich no matter what happens.
Their base salary is $2 million to begin with.
Yeah.
You know.
But if they're not performing, maybe some of that should go away.
Yeah.
I don't become a sports agent.
I don't think the players' union would allow that.
Wendy, we ought to be managers.
Yeah. They still wouldn't win, Mike, but we'd have fun.
It would be a good time.
Thank you for calling. We appreciate
it. Thanks, Mike. Now that they've established that most of your salary is just a given, we give you the money, you're on our team, you get the money, those incentives are nice little things to get. But
by the way, game one for the Cubs has been set.
Friday.
8:15.
8:15 start on Friday.
8:15
Central Time?
Yeah, Central Time.
All right. I don't have tickets.
I'll be in Ireland.
Oh. I'll think of you when I'm there.
If you go, I will come back.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I am so excited to talk to you two. I have been trying to get on this show for 5 months.
Oh, thank you, Matt.
Well, don't ruin it. Don't waste it. Here you go, Matt.
No, I got we need Dusty Baker or Lou Piniella to come back.
Do you really? Seriously?
Dusty Baker did nothing.
Yeah. Not, Dusty Baker was like the heart and soul of the Cubs for those years. Uh-huh. And he got us to the NLS.
Really? Five months?
He was for a little while, and then he was prone to napping during the games.
Yeah, he was not the excitement or exuberance we need either.
And to answer Steve's question, 5 months. Lou Piniella, then. What about Lou?
I don't know.
I mean, the other reason why he left is to take care of his mother.
Right.
And she's better. So
is she better? I didn't know what happened there. Did she get better?
I'm about 90% sure she's better.
Oh, I hope you're right.
Now, Lou Manfredini, now you're talking.
And hey, if we can get Lou Manfredini, he builds things. He can build that team up.
How about it? That's it. That's the answer.
How about Lou Piniella's mother to manage?
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Matt.
Hey, Matt, we appreciate you listening. We appreciate that.
You think Mrs. Piniella in the dugout would be, that'd be fun to watch, wouldn't it?
I mean, he just kind of bolted on the team, didn't he?
He did. He left before the season ended.
Right.
That's bad.
I'm telling you, Lou Manfredini's looking good.
I gotta go home.
Although, if his mom was sick, and his mom, I'm guessing his mom is up there in years, I'm guessing.
Why? Because no spring chicken?
Because Lou's kind of up there in years, so his mom.
Lou Piniella, right? Not Manfredini. We're getting him mixed up.
He's old too, Manfredini.
Yeah. Can say that he's going to Ireland.
He's no Piniella.
No. All right. A break. We need to take a break. And then Steve has the news, and then there is more show ahead. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, you know what I'm thinking about that 8:15 start on Friday?
Yeah.
If they're playing San Francisco, that's a 6:15 start to the people on the West Coast.
Okay.
But if they're playing New York, that's a 9:15 start to the Mets fans.
We don't give a care about them.
Yeah, who cares about the Mets fans?
They're used to staying up late.
Yep. It's the city that never sleeps.
Any predictions on the game?
Yeah, 8:15 start.
Steve's holding true to that.
Right.
You mean who the opponent will be or how they'll do?
How they'll do.
I think it's going to be a good series. I think they'll do well.
You guys
for the
are
Cubs.
So
for the
funny
because you're predicting a good series, but we don't know who they're going to play yet.
I just think they stack up fine. I mean, they're both tough opponents. The Giants and Mets are tough teams, but I do like the Cubs' chances against either one of them.
How far did they make it last year?
They won the first. Well, they won the wild card game against Pittsburgh. Then they won the first round against St. Louis. But then the Mets were kind of a buzzsaw after that.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, went pretty quick.
Do both of you still have baseball cards in the spokes of your bicycles?
Yeah, I don't even have a bike anymore, but I have my bike wheels in my room.
I have a baseball card in the spoke of my Jeep. So I've grown up a little.
Was it one of those plastic hologram ones
that
would hold up longer?
Yes. Yes. I also used to get the baseball cards from Hostess products. Every summer, if you got Twinkies, Ho-Hos, or Ding-Dongs, you'd get two baseball cards on the back, and they'd have like this sugary grease on them.
They were thinner.
Yeah, they were thinner. Right. They weren't as good as Topps or Donruss, but they would smell like Twinkies, and then they had, like I said, that sugary grease. You know,
is
whenever
that good
I think
or
of
bad?
I don't know, but
did you ever lick one, Bill?
Yeah, a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
A few times.
Powdery?
Well, it's more of a
sugary cardboard.
Ooh, it's a viscous sort of taste.
Yeah, it's not pleasant, but it's not the worst thing in the world.
What's your viscosity?
Unless it was Ted Sizemore, then you couldn't do it.
Right.
No could do.
Right. Isn't that weird? Always Ted Sizemore. All right. How about this? There was a study published. Now, it's in conjunction with two different sources, The Atlantic and Men's Fitness. What they wanted to know is, would the average person want to live to be 100 years old or not? Now, I know you and I have discussed this in the past, and you're not a huge fan of living to the age of 100.
Well, we have discussed this before.
Why wouldn't you want to live to be 100?
Because I want to make sure that I'm still as spunky as I am now.
Sure.
If I'm just 100.
Right.
And I'm not doing anything.
Failing health.
Yeah, then why do I?
I guess.
I'll take 85.
I just want to know.
You want to know when your day is?
Yeah.
You do not.
And you don't think so?
Oh, that would be a tough thing to know.
Yeah, but what if you're planning for the last 30 years of your life and you end up dying tomorrow?
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Well,
I could go out for
a
little lobster, steak, surf, and turf tonight if I knew. If I knew I had 6 months left.
Live it up and charge it up.
401k.
But seriously, think about that. You know, those crazy doomsday clocks and all that. What if, honestly, you had the Grim Reaper that popped into your car on the way home tonight and said, it's tomorrow. What could you possibly do? And you would just be depressed.
I'd go to Chipotle for sure.
Live it up. It's your last day.
Because it doesn't matter if you have any digestive issues when you're in heaven.
Wouldn't get a salad bowl.
Right.
I don't know. That's information we shouldn't have.
Well, many people said, now to me, I think 100 is a nice round number. You got a century. You can do a lot of things in 100 years, right?
So what if you could get 101 out of it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think 100. I mean, like you said, if you're healthy, there's no guarantee you'd be healthy.
You want to go out with them wanting more, too.
Yeah. So. But 100 sounds like...
I don't want to go out wanting more. I want to go out going, I'm done.
You did it. It's time to cash them in. A lot of people said 75 was plenty.
That is so not enough.
I don't think that's enough.
Those people were younger than we are.
Right. Right, because as that number looms closer and closer, you go, that's not enough.
Those people were 17.
75? I want to see my kids get married and have kids, if at all possible. My parents were unable to do that.
Oh, that's true.
Well, that's not true. My mom saw my brother have kids, but not me.
That's not enough time.
I know.
Well,
she would have whined about how dirty their fingernails were and how my boys have too long a hair.
Probably.
But I miss that.
Right. You want that. Well, all right. So the first part of this, like I said, was The Atlantic asking people, is 100 good? What do you want to live to? And like I said, a lot of people just said 75. Not enough. But then at Men's Fitness, they came in and they said, well, we can help you guys. If you don't want to live to be 100, we can tell you a bunch of things to do to prevent that from happening.
Eat bacon, drink a lot, don't exercise.
For the most part.
Don't get sleep.
That's it.
Put a lot of stress in your life.
Right. Right.
Work with Wendy Snyder.
Well, that was number 6 on the list. In fairness to you, that was not at the top of the list. That was number 6.
Thank God. Please share.
Can I tell you what some of these are?
This is Men's Health.
So I think all of these, or most of these, do relate to men. No, not all of them. The first one does.
Somebody just texted, I'm 77 and I want to keep going, which is a good way to think.
Yes.
Because 75, you wouldn't be texting us.
Right. That's true, isn't it? You know, now that I think about it, maybe even 100 isn't enough for me. I wouldn't mind surpassing it. I've always said 100, but now that I think about it, I want more.
How much more?
105.
But that's an odd number. Wouldn't you want 104? 101.
I don't know. Ask me when I'm 100. I'll give you a different answer when
and
I'm 100.
You know 100. What you'll say?
What?
What?
Right, probably. I'll say this. Honey, Eleanor Roosevelt's here with a question. I'll be so out of it by then.
So, all right. So, if you are so out of it, do you want a so big deal? You say I'm 100.
Keep
you whippersnapper.
Coming. I don't think you'll be able to say whippersnapper in the future. I think that'll be one of the banned words.
You what?
That Donald Trump Jr., our president, is.
Oh,
and he'll be our president back then or up then. All right. So here's some things that you can do if you don't want to be 100.
And your mileage may vary because it is men's health. I guess some pertain to women, but we have different issues, obviously.
The first one pertains only to men. It says keep your testicles intact. Now, bear with me on this. Because
that's number one?
This is crazy. I had no idea that this was true or not. Did you know there was a study that looked at 1,000 inmates at a Kansas mental institution, some of whom had been castrated?
I was part of that study.
Steve, you were not in the study.
No?
No.
I thought I was.
That was not you.
Oh.
The castrated inmates, Il Castrata.
Did you ever
Il Castrata, that's the name.
The singers.
That's the name of the singer.
Did you ever think you'd say non-castrated males or castrated males on the radio?
I never thought I would say that on the radio.
Okay, go back
who
to the findings.
Who gets castrated?
Listen, just,
that's the first question you're serving.
Right. Right. Number one. The castrated inmates.
If yes, move on to question two.
The castrated inmates lived an average of 13.6 years longer.
Where do you sign up?
Than those who still had everything in place. So if you were to get,
I don't have any.
No,
can I tell you?
Not you.
I know you guys forget.
No.
Are all these done in a doctor's office?
It doesn't say, Steve.
Okay.
Why would that be? Why would you live 13 and a
because
half years?
Because testosterone kills you.
Boy, I think it might.
Testosterone levels, are they low? Because I got a couple of products.
How low can you go?
Your testosterone's okay.
A study of eunuch guards in Korea, as far back, the eunuch guards of Korea, Wendy.
That is the name of people who don't have that.
No, but they can dribble between their legs more often than the non-eunuch guards.
Or can they?
You've lost all credibility right then and there.
From as far back as the 1500s, reached the exact same conclusion as the castrated inmates, with guards living an average of 14 to 19 years longer than the men who had all their factory parts. Doesn't say that. I added that part. Why would that be? Why would you live that much longer?
Testosterone, I'm telling you.
Is it that fatal?
Well, it's not fatal.
It's gotta be. Well, look at how much longer you live. But again, quality of life.
Why would you want to live that?
Quality of life. I don't know.
I gotta stop asking questions.
So the interest, it says here, again, according to Men's Fitness, so the interest of cutting things off before you reach 100 is, boy, it makes a huge difference. I can't believe it.
But
so
wait.
You're less of a risk taker. You're probably dying, you know, more naturally.
But wait, you said keep all your parts, and then you said that the guys who don't have their parts live longer.
Right, so they're saying this facetiously. They're saying if you don't want to live long, do these things, keep your testicles intact. Because what they're saying is you will, if you're a man, you will live a lot longer if you have them removed. That's insane.
No.
That's nuts. Literally.
You're a whack job.
Cut it out. All right, we'll take a break, and then we'll try to explain more of these. If you don't want to live to be 100, do these things. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy.
Play ball.
Reading from a joint study. This
don't
had to
say
do...
joint.
You're a shock jock. I just decided. You are absolutely a shock jock. The Atlantic and Men's Fitness got together. The Atlantic wanted to know, part one, how long do you want to live to be? How about 100? A lot of people said, no, thank you. That's too long. I'll take 75.
That one just
that
shocks
seems upsetting.
Me.
That is upsetting. Then Men's Fitness, they jumped in and they said, hey, we can help you. If you don't want to live to be 100, we can give you things that will prevent that from happening. For instance, if you don't want to be 100 years old, spend more time with your relatives. How about this? There's a Spanish proverb that loosely translated says this: an ounce of blood is worth more than a pound of friendship. This could be the motto of the anti-centurion club. McGill University researchers found that the time you spend with family members, especially the ones you don't like, increases your chance of early death.
Because it stresses you out.
That's it.
Blood pressure goes up.
While time spent with friends decreases it by 7%. So you'll live longer. Remember, these are reversed. If you want to die early, spend more time with your family,
That's nice.
But if you want to live longer, spend time with your friends.
And blow off your family.
How about, now, does that surprise you? I'm not surprised
by
that.
See, honestly, I think it would be the opposite.
Do you?
Yeah, because your family's got your back, hopefully.
But think about your average holiday where you're with people that, it's family members that you're not with usually. It's the residual family members, kind of the ones
on
the periphery.
We don't ever fight.
You don't?
No.
Man. That's amazing.
I fight with my immediate family.
Oh, and you see them every day.
I know.
See, it says here, according to this chart, you'll be dead Friday.
I believe it.
Here's another way if you don't want to live to be 100, according to Men's Health Magazine. Keep being your old pessimistic self, Wendy, it says in brackets. Who are all these people who insist that the glass is half full? They need to shut up already. The University of Illinois founded that optimistic people have healthier hearts and significantly better blood sugar and cholesterol levels than their counterparts, according to a paper that appeared in the January-February 2015 issue of Health Behavior and Policy Review.
I believe that.
So keep an optimistic attitude. You will live longer. Pessimism will kill you. It's too late for you.
Right.
But this is a cautionary tale. If you don't want to be 100 years old, if you don't want to live to be 100, just sit down.
Yes, you need to exercise. Keep the body moving.
Exactly. An Indiana University study recommended that people whose jobs have them sitting for long periods of time. Where are you going? Are you leaving?
I'm standing up.
You're standing up? People who have jobs like that get up and take a five-minute break, should get up and take a five-minute break every hour.
Smoke break?
It doesn't say a smoke break. No, it just says break. I think that would work against you. The assumption here is that when these standers slash walkers live longer, they will have plenty of time to sit down later.
Always time to sleep in the grave, Bill.
I've heard people say that before.
I hate when people say
that. I'll sleep when I'm dead.
You know what? That's not as a peaceful sleep as the one I have every night.
No, 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 no. I have time for one more here. This is the most obvious one. Give up, if you don't want to live to be 100, give up those 3 lattes a day. Only people who want to live longer should drink coffee.
Really?
A study found that drinking coffee could lower your risk of death. But that's not exactly our goal here, it says. In what's been called the largest ever study of coffee, researchers at the National Institute of Health found that after 13 years, men who drank 2 to 3 cups of coffee a day had a 10% lower chance of dying compared to men who didn't drink coffee.
You better start drinking coffee.
I never drink coffee.
You're going to die.
Ever. Well, everybody is.
Sooner.
Is that 10%
true? 10% sooner.
Women who drank the same amount had a 13% decreased risk. Why? Why would coffee keep you alive longer?
Caffeine's good for you, not testosterone.
I am shocked by this.
So I'd rather go to Starbucks than...
That's crazy. Although you spend those extra 13 years in a line at Starbucks, so it all balances out.
Good point.
Coffee drinkers also had a lower risk of dying from specific diseases such as respiratory disease, heart disease, diabetes, as well as injuries and accidents.
See, because you're more alert.
Like, you may be right.
So no injuries and accidents.
Right. You might be right. I am shocked by that.
That does surprise me as well.
I can't believe that. I would have thought just the opposite. I would have thought the coffee made your heart beat faster and you'd be more at a risk for heart disease or some sort of heart failure.
No, because if your heart's beating faster, it's clearing itself out.
But that can't... Is that true?
I have no idea. I am looking at Starbucks right now. I'm going to go get a coffee.
A lot of healthy people looking over at us, back at us. I would think that using that time to exercise...
Well, you can do both.
I guess you could do both. Yeah, you could. That's the one
Start drinking coffee.
I hate the flavor and the smell.
Would you rather be castrated?
Is that my... Those are my options? Is that Starbucks' new ad campaign? That's not going to work.
Take a little off the top.
Right.
Or bottom.
Right. Either way. All right. We'll take a quick break. Ro and Ann are going to be in just a minute. We'll find out what's going on with them. Stay where you are. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.